Blog Talk Radio.
The United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credit.
Kim Baker resigned.
Straight away, but now we're coming back to you.
Show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at tracyandfriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 9 minutes after the hour of 12 o'clock here on Wednesday, the 28th of November. We are almost at the end, and it is a beautiful sunny day here in Northeast Ohio, out here in Youngstown, Ohio, where we are from. And where we broadcast, and those of you who are on the internet that chime in and tell us where how your weather is, and I'm just happy to see the sun and to see a little bit of warmth. I got a little vest on, and I'm happy. Styx is in studio with me today. Styx comes on Wednesdays and Mondays. And today we usually do about a financial piece, or we do something on that, or we talk about oil and drilling and gas and stuff. Pat, the election is over, so we'll probably get back on track with that. And as we go into 2013, things will change. I've plug it in, Mark Mangi, to be here with me on the first and third Thursdays. And, we'll get Ben rolled back in here. I am looking for another female who can give us a little time. So if there's anybody out there that wants to throw their hat into the ring, we do not pay here. We are, we just show up because we're crazy. You got to turn your mic up. That's number three. He's over here talking into the air.
It's a labor of love.
Yeah, we just love what we do. So we do not pay here, but we do have perks, and the perks is that we just to come in here and we get to do radio. How's that? It's a good resume builder. It's like an internship, I guess. Whatever you want to call it, you know, it's not slave labor because we don't make you, but we don't pay either. So, we want to hear from you today, and the number is 347-945-5229. And we're just going to talk about a couple things. How you doing, Styx?
Really good. Really good. Had a wonderful morning. My new natural gas compressor is almost done. I'm going to get it Friday, get it installed. Looking forward to that.
Styx is helping me produce some of my shows, and I want to thank him so much. He really does a wonderful job. He's so very, very thorough. And I appreciate that. I really do.
Thank you.
And he sends me some stuff. You know, you guys have to know me. I'm not a last person. Man, I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning, and I've been doing a whole lot since 5. But I haven't opened up your email from Greece until a few minutes ago. Because usually I can, like, you know, I can shot it from where I am.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
I'm looking at this thing, and I'm going, dude, I can't read all this right now. I'm like, you know, you make me look bad. Don't they have?
there's a whole lot of stuff going on in Greece right now.
I know, a lot of bad stuff, a lot of
scary stuff.
I tell you how I got to Greece today. Today, you know, it's the holidays, and this is how I got to Greece. I'm in part. Everybody knows. You guys hear me talk about it often. I'm a Rotarian. And that's why I come in late on Tuesdays. And yesterday I dogged Jeff out. I did a Jeff yesterday.
Late.
Oh, no. I did a Jeff. See, there's one thing to be Jeff. That's another thing to do a Jeff.
Well, explain to me what the difference is.
See, Jeff will text you and say, be there in 10 minutes. And you know you got 30 minutes.
Okay.
Jeff will say, I'm going to be a little late. And you know he's going to be real late. So I text him and said, I'm going to be a little late. I got here like at 2:45.
Yeah, I was listening yesterday. I heard you come in.
So that's Jeff. That's how you do it. You just get there and be like, oops, you know, stuff just happened. But nevertheless, yeah, I'm sorry. I segued off. No, but this is how I got to it. We get a magazine called The Rotarian every month. And inside of this magazine this month for December, they have an article called Lives in Ruins. And you have to realize Rotary is a humanitarian, not a political, not a financial.
Lucas Innovation Associates.
Sorry. Not a vocational, not an economic magazine. It is very, very philanthropic and humanitarian. And so I got this magazine, and I'm watching and this is what the headline says. It says lost jobs, lost security, lost futures. Ordinary Greeks feel the ground under their feet slipping away and fear that their country's frayed social net won't hold them if they fail. What will the human cost of an economic crisis that has pushed a formerly prosperous nation into the brink of disaster? I was like, whoa. And, you know, I'm very, very concerned. You know, we heard during the ABC clips, you heard them talking about somebody said the Mayan calendar and the world is supposed to end in like 20 days. You know, FYI, so if you don't know, the world is not going to end in 20 days.
No.
It might end tomorrow, but it won't be 20 days. I can guarantee you that.
Might be 21 days.
It might be 22 days, but it won't end in 20 days. But when I see, but does that mean that America will have the success and the prosperity that it's had in its past, and that it has right now? What I find is Americans, we eat what we choose. And we're talking about the working poor and the people that are impoverished. People that are impoverished say, well, I don't eat beans. What do you mean you don't eat beans? Well, I don't like them. I don't eat them. Children say, I don't eat that. I don't eat eggs. I don't like oatmeal, so I don't eat that. And we're talking about impoverished people, and we have to become really, really honest about this. We need to define poverty in America, because poverty in America and poverty outside of America in a third world country is totally different.
Well, in general, poverty in the Western world is different than poverty in the rest of the world.
You know, you can't tell me that you're poor and you smoke cigarettes. That's not poverty,
right?
To the extent that you really need to understand that. We need to be honest about that. And, you know, even when I look at Christmas now, and this is the time of season where we find a lot of people in a lot of need. We got a lot of people collecting a lot of perishable foods and that type of stuff. And, you know, non-perishable foods are giving out coats, are giving out toys, are giving out this. But see, I saw a photo not too long ago of a young lady who took a 2-liter pop bottle and she made shoes out of it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that.
See, you can't...
She made herself a pair of sandals.
That she made herself a pair of sandals. You can't say that you're poor when people are giving you things to wear.
New things.
New things. It can be... No, it don't have to be new. Old things, new things, bad things, borrowed things. If you've got a pair of shoes, and as a matter of fact, you know, I hear, you know, my parents and people talk, especially the older ones that who went through depression,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about they didn't have enough money for a new pair of shoes, that they would take the rings off of the mason jars, and they would strap the sole of the shoe to the top of the shoe so that it would hold itself together.
My grandmother spent the depression in Chicago with her two sisters, and they had one pair of shoes between the three of them, and they switched off days going to look for a job.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you have people who had that kind of impoverishment, but even in their poverty, their poverty has not ever looked like those that I see where you see flies flying.
And in the case of my grandparents, they were first generation off the farm. They moved from Wisconsin down to Chicago, and they said that all of those tenements in Chicago at that time were all full of farm kids, and they would order chickens from Sears and Roebuck, and they would keep them in bird cages, and they would go scavenge the garbage from behind the restaurants to feed the chickens so they had eggs.
Again.
And people, those kinds of, that mentality, that thought process doesn't exist anymore.
But go back, with before you go even there, you have to understand, at least they had the chicken. We have to understand there are people that are living in the world today.
Right.
That are, they don't have the Sears nor the chicken.
Right. There are a lot of places in this country, the richest person in town owns a goat.
Not in the country.
In the world.
In the world.
In the world, yes, in the world.
You know, when we look at, I was talking to somebody, and we were talking about Afghanistan. And we were talking about the opium and poppy trade,
mm-hmm.
because opium is still real.
Very real.
And so is poppies. And they said, do you really think a man who makes, I think they said, like $5 a month, who farms for the poppy seeds over in Afghanistan, really cares about your drug problem in America?
Well, not only that, they can make, the farmers can make way more off of poppies over there than they can off of corn.
But you've
got a double whammy going. One, they're gonna maximize their profit.
But go back to the dollar figure sticks. You're going somewhere else. Go back to if he makes $5 a month to farm poppies, why does he care about American extravagance?
He's probably jealous of it.
That's the point.
So he really doesn't
care. That's the point. The point is not about the drug trade. The point is about he makes $5 a month and he lives in a cave as he farms for poppies. You have people who are in China who are still relegated to one child. And, you know, as we talk about the Chinese empire growing, they're poor. It's poorer than our poor.
Well, and they talk about the difference between rich and poor in this country.
That's
rich and poor in China is unbelievable.
That's what I'm saying. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to build a case for what we're not looking at. We're trying to sacrifice the rich because we're poor, and we're trying to put a class warfare and a division among us that's really going to cause our demise. Our demise is going to come from our division.
Yeah.
More so than the rich getting richer and the poor getting poor.
Well, a house divided against itself cannot stand.
That's what I'm saying. And our problem is we're not dealing with the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is we are not understanding that America is in a critical condition that no one's dealing with, and we're not dealing with what the problem is. And we're not learning from Greece. Another part of this letter, this article says that we don't make any plans for our future. All we can do is cope for what we have to do today. It's like a natural disaster. Can you imagine? I mean, I went to see Hurricane Sandy, and we saw the devastation. We saw Hurricane Katrina. We saw the devastation. We saw what happened in San Francisco. We see what happens with wildfires. Can you imagine it happened to the whole country at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
FEMA can't cover that if there's no money. Because right now, FEMA's broken, having a hard time dealing with the devastation of New York and New Jersey. They're still having recouped, as a matter of fact, from Katrina. We're still dealing with the devastation of the wildfires out on the West Coast. So tell me, what will happen if we continue on the route that we're going in and we don't start making the necessary measures of sacrificing? We talk about foreclosure of your home and your personal devastation of you losing your home. What happens when America loses its whole land?
It can happen.
I know it can happen.
I mean, it can absolutely. I'm looking at an article here. It's titled "Ripped Apart by Financial Crisis: Greece, Society in Freefall." In the first paragraph, Athens, Greece, a sign taped to a wall in an Athens hospital appealed for civility from patients. The doctors on duty have been unpaid since May, it read. Please respect their work.
But even so,
we can't fathom. We can't get our heads wrapped around something like that.
We are, you know, you and I were talking about the Powerball, and was it called Powerball and Mega Millions, and we don't have Powerball here, we have Mega Millions.
Right.
I thought we had them all, but I don't know. But can you, I mean, we are going after our $500 million, they say the Powerball is. But do we understand that the dollar is only worth like 40 cents today?
Oh, it's worth less than that.
It's no.
Worth since like 1913, it's worth like a dime.
No, it's more than a dime.
No.
Yes, the value of a dollar is more than a dime.
I'll look that up.
The number is 330-744-5117, and wants you to give us a call and chime in, because as we walk into this holiday season, and we see this fiscal cliff coming, and you see the Republicans and the Democrats, the president and everyone else, playing, posturing with the American future. And as we go through today, I'm going to talk about a little bit else that I've read, talking about if we go off the fiscal cliff, how much money other people will make.
Well, if this inflation thing takes a hold, this will be the largest transmittal of wealth in the history of mankind, because people will trade what they have for what they need in an unbelievable amount of.
I'm looking at something called the inflation counter. I'm sorry, inflation calculator, and it says in 1913. Let me go to a real number. So let's go to someone who's 80 years old. So I'm sorry, I say 82. You go to 1930. If you bought something for $20 in 1930, it would cost you $277.03 today.
That's what I'm looking at on measuring worth too.
Let's really think about this. If I'm going to go to the year that I was born, in 1964, if you bought something for $20 today, it would cost me $149 today.
Mm-hmm. And that's why your wages. That's why wages aren't keeping up.
I mean, that's just 47 years ago, 48 years ago.
And here's the real kicker is. Prior to the installment of the Federal Reserve in the United States, there was no inflation in this country.
So, because
if you take that same number and you go 1789 to 1913, it's almost identical.
So the question is, what does that say for us?
Well, we've allowed ourselves to be lured into a mindset. It happened in the early 20th century with the income tax and with the Federal Reserve. The income tax was sold as a soak the rich plan, and it's released the inherent evil in the human spirit, the covetousness, the greed, it just has.
So what will that do to us today?
If we don't.
Because we're not paying attention, you know, and they're posturing with this fiscal cliff. And we don't understand the devastation of what will happen if they allow these Bush tax cuts to expire. And, you know, I think now that they're fidgeting with numbers. Because I really don't think that President Obama is willing to move off his $250,000 a year.
Well, and not only that, he's not willing to come off his pet subsidies for his pet projects either. he's not willing to come off the subsidies for wind and solar and ethanol and gerbil power and pie in the sky and whatever else he thinks is better than coal and natural gas.
And so if that is the case, what good is the dollar, or what good is global warming or global climate change or whatever they want to do if America's not here to deal with it?
Well, see, the president wants to see the demise of the United States. He wants to see the UN running the show. I mean, this agenda, we had the Agenda 21 lady on.
Yes.
And the president's got his head wrapped right around Agenda 21.
I don't want to collude this with his politics. I don't, because not yet.
Is that politics, or
yes.
is that just a mindset?
No, it's, I don't even know if it's a mindset. He wrote some things in his book. We know that he has a very socialistic mentality because progressives do. We understand that. But I don't believe in my heart that he truly wants the America to go completely under. Now, he may want the dollar to erode so that the new Amero can come to fruition. But I don't think that he wants America to go belly up. But you have to understand, during a time of a fiscal devastation, there are people who are going to make a lot of money.
Yep.
And I don't think we understand that.
And I want to back up to the Federal Reserve thing just real quick, because I just pulled this up. If you threw a dollar under the mattress in 1789 when they signed the Constitution, in 1913 when they instituted the Federal Reserve, it would have taken $1.12 to buy what that dollar would have bought. That's over 100 years, there was zero inflation. That's what the Federal Reserve has given us. And during that same period of time, personal wealth in this country skyrocketed
again
across the board, from top to bottom.
Before we go, you're going too far, because people, we talk about Federal Reserve, we hear people talking about it, but people don't know the origins of it. They don't know how the Rothschilds came into, and the Rothschilds and the elitists came into the Federal Reserve for a World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand. We don't understand how the Kennedys play into this. We don't understand how all this comes together, because this is something that, you know, you hear tongue in cheek. You hear a lot of conspiracy theories. But when you really look at how it will affect, because I don't want us to go so deep that it's over a cliff,
right.
But I do want us to understand that the wealth that you despise in the nation, they're going to survive.
Well, and that's the thing. This whole soak the rich thing the president is going after is not going after the Buffetts and the Gateses. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand it. He's going after the guy that owns two or three stores here in town, the Henry Nemenses.
He's going after small business. But
yes.
Again, we don't understand. See, even your small business, your successful small businesses who have $1 million-plus in assets, or say $2 million-plus in assets, they're not the ones who are going to be devastated. See, they're I want you to understand, if you've got $1 million in assets,
it's not $1 million income.
You're not going to be devastated.
Right.
But the person who makes $50,000, $60,000 and below, you're the one who's going to be devastated,
mm-hmm.
because you're the one the closest to the bottom.
Well, I want to use an example that's even lower than that. My mother works at McDonald's, and she's worked there for 20 years. She likes it because they give her own schedule, you know. She likes it because of the flexible hours and stuff. She normally works a 36-hour work week. After 2014, she's going to work a 29-hour work week.
But listen to what I'm saying.
All right.
Your mother's not dependent.
No.
Listen to what I'm saying.
But there are
a lot of people who are dependent.
And they will not get that 29 hours or 39 hours.
So the question is, if they don't get the 39 hours, if they don't get the work that they deserve, and you also put Obamacare on top of it, which is another tax, how do you think they're going to survive? And what this says right here is they have a problem because the government cannot solve the problem because the government doesn't have the resources.
The government's broke.
Absolutely. So how are you going to buy anything when you have no resources to buy? Go ahead, Philadelphia. Alex, I'll pull you up next, and then Stanley.
Yeah, the comment I wanted to make was I believe Obama is trying to share the wealth of America around different countries in the world. That's one of the reasons why he allowed the Brazilians to get the offshore rights to drill for oil off of the coast of Brazil, and he took that away from America. He's also allowing India and China to develop economically and allowing certain industries to stay over there permanently and not trying to protect them by trying to keep them in the American economy. So I think he's trying to kind of redistribute the wealth among all of these developing economies, because I believe his philosophy is similar to when the movie came out called 2016, where the author of that movie tried to prove the fact that Obama's father was a subject of Britain. And it's the fact that he was under the oppression of a colonizer. Obama also sees America as being a colonizer, and he wants to change the balance of power.
And so, this is my issue. See, President Obama is set for the rest of his life. He won't have to worry about his daughters. He won't have to worry about his grandchildren. He's going to be just fine. But my problem is the people that he has influenced, and the people who have supported him, and the people who did not support him, who are not in the same position as him, they're going to be devastated by the inflation and what is to come. And I am not in the mood for another soup line. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, Tracy. I was listening yesterday with Jeff, and I didn't get a chance to call in, but he was touching on somewhat on this, saying that, you know, it was impossible to grow a country from the bottom up and from the middle out, you know, like Obama says. And what you're talking about now touches on that, because you know, I don't know if Jeff is there, but this is the reason why he's wrong. Obama says all the right things, but he doesn't do what's necessary to implement them. There was a time when our money was, well, when our money had intrinsic value, and it doesn't anymore because of the Federal Reserve, whatever. And actually, our dollar is worth less than 4 cents of what it was before the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, if you look at that. But the thing about it is that we've been conditioned to think that our money comes from the government, which is totally backwards, and that's really the problem. You know, our money is supposed to come from natural resources, natural capital, human capital, or natural resources, and that's the way it used to be. But now, the mindset is totally flipped, where we think money comes from the government when they don't have any money. And
correct.
I think that's the crux of the problem.
Yes.
I think you're onto something there, because you have to realize people don't realize the money that they get comes from people.
They don't understand the difference between currency and money. We don't have
exactly.
money in this country anymore. We have currency. And they don't understand that new wealth is only created when a human being acts on a natural resource. There is no new wealth created until a human being acts on a natural resource, period.
But this is the issue that I want people to understand today, is the effect that it will have on most of the people who listen to my show will be devastation.
Yes, it will.
And if you continue on, because you're not prepared, and right now they're doing everything that they can to get you to take your money out of your hands and give it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
This is the holiday season, so we want exchange of commerce. And we need the exchange of commerce for us to have business, for people to go to work, and for people to grow. But what happens when you no longer have that dollar to exchange?
Well,
for goods and services.
But the thing is, not even. Let's go one step further than that. We have been conditioned over several generations that the government's going to give us Social Security, our employers are going to give us our pension, we're going to have health care after we retire, and we have been conditioned not to want to take care of ourselves and to plan for those inevitable events.
But remember, the society has not given me the opportunity. Now, let me take my break. Stanley, I'm going to pull you up and let you make a comment, then I'm going to take a break and let you come back. Go ahead, Stanley.
The thing that we always never looked at is the inequality that we see between the rich and the poor. And like I said yesterday, we never focused on that. So I disagree what Six is doing. The problem is we used to be a country of fairness. We used to be a country, like you said, that there was a big batch between the rich and the poor. Now the batch is almost 200%, 300%, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And it's getting to the point that I disagree with Six when she's saying that's normal, that's okay. That's not normal. And that's
Let me take my break. I'll be right back, 669. I'll pick you up when I'll come back. The number is 330-74-330, wrong number. 347-945-5229. We want to hear from you today. We'll be right back.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingly Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingly offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingly, it's not clean. Kingly Hand Wash and Wax, 309 West Midlothian Boulevard.
Are you satisfied with your current level of reproductive health care? Have you been considering making a change? Dr. Hill and Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley are accepting new patients. Call 330-746-7007 for comprehensive female care that includes fertility treatment, contraception management, and prenatal care through delivery. Dr. Hill and Associates in Women's Health of Mahoning Valley provide individualized, personalized care in a soothing, first-class environment. Call 330-746-7007. Most insurances accept.
Do you depend on your computer? Then you know that a virus on your computer is bad news. But there is something you can do. Just call this number, 330-759-9700. That's 330-759-9700. That's the number for Ambassador Technologies in Liberty Township. Ambassador Technologies specializes in virus removal and restores your computer to full performance. We also specialize in computer repair, from desktops, laptops, laptop screens, laptop power supplies, laptop batteries, and hardware updates. And when your business needs networking, Ambassador Technologies is the place to go. Ambassador Technologies, Youngstown's best for computer repair, networking, website development, and even low-cost business cards and publishing. Call Ambassador Technologies at 330-759-9700. Online at ambastech.com. That's ambastech.com.
I'm Mark Lavoie, WSOM News. A federal judge sentenced a former Youngstown drug dealer to an additional 18 months in prison for lying during a trial of five men involved in a drug ring. 24-year-old Marquise Wilkins is already serving a nine-year prison sentence for a drug case back in 2008. The Humane Society of the United States wants to join the state in defending a lawsuit that challenges Ohio's new law regulating dangerous wildlife. The lawsuit, filed earlier this month in Columbus federal court by four owners of exotic animals, contends the restrictions threaten their First Amendment and property rights. And the Ohio Senate's leader says his chamber won't act this session on a bill that would boot Planned Parenthood to the back of the line for public family planning money. Also yesterday, Republican Senate President Tom Niehaus said the Senate would not vote on a bill that proposed banning abortions after the first fetal heartbeat is detected. You're up to date. I'm Mark Lavoie, WSOM News.
There's a Fidelity U.S. coach running the road today. Why aren't you on it? Fidelity U.S. coach in Boardman and Alliance and WSOM are going pink with a donation to the American Breast Cancer Association for all charters and tours booked for a limited time. U.S. coach has money-saving day and overnight trips for you to all the regions, new and exciting casinos and shopping destinations. Call 1-800-U.S.-COACH and go pink this season with U.S. Coach and WSOM.
Putting America and our valley back to work. Recognizing local companies and business owners that are generating new ideas and innovative concepts that are helping to lead our valley's workforce in the new economy.
Like ETI Technical College, creating quality programs in demand fields with options that save you time and money.
We offer several different programs, law, business, medicine, web design, accounting, some skilled trades. we give the students an opportunity to focus the curriculum solely around their area of interest, trimming away a lot of the fat, you know, saving them time, saving them money. Two things as you get older, you're going to wish you had more of. It's time and money. And a college like ETI is able to save you both.
Putting America and our valley back to work. To find out how your business can be a part of our program, call 330-783-1000. That's 330-783-1000.
Deering Compressor, proud sponsor of Putting America and Our Valley Back to Work.
Introducing Mr. Perfume and More, the area's most recent discount outlet for perfumes and colognes, and the most beautiful handbag.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, like I said, that's one thing that I hope we're going to resolve, because the inequality that we're having between the... So it's, one day we won't have any middle class. It won't exist anymore, people. It'll be just the poor. The poor
that's what's happening
in the
big cities.
There won't be any more middle class. There won't exist anymore. It'll be just poor and rich. It's either you're poor or you're rich. That's it.
Well, that's what's happening in the big cities. You can't afford to live in a place like New York City unless you at least make $100,000 a year, a place like Manhattan. You couldn't afford to live there. The rents are like over $2,000 or $3,000 a month.
I know. Don't remind me. I know the rents are very expensive in New York.
I'm
sick and tired of not showing that, not seeing that, and when we bring that up, it's like, oh my God. I'm like, that's happening, and nobody's talking about that. Everybody from Democrat to Republican, everybody's saying it's okay, let the rich be. It's okay that a human being's worth $33 billion. Really? Really?
Well, what America has to do is change the concept of the corporation and not make the corporation management heavy in terms of profits. Don't give all of the profits to the stockholders and the people in management. Share the profits with the employees more. And that would require the whole concept of the way the corporation is structured in America to completely change.
Hey, hold on, guys. And I want to pull Stanley back in, too, because I don't know what you guys are talking about during the break, so I've got to shift you back over. But I want to go back to what Stanley was saying, because he was talking about the rich and the poor.
Right.
And in some ways, I have to say to Stanley, in some ways I can agree. And the reason why I say that is because if you don't have access to capital, you can't make capital work in a lot of ways.
But I disagree with Stanley, and here's why. Because Andrew Carnegie was much richer than his lowest paid employee.
I'm not talking. I'm going to say I agree with him in all that he says. What I'm saying is,
so I don't think access. I don't think what we're seeing now is any different than it ever was in this country.
No,
yes, we are.
Hold on, Stanley. Hold up. I'm going to let you back in. I promise. What I'm saying is, I agree with Stanley to the access to capital for entrepreneurship is not easy. And when I say that is, at one time you had a local banker, which went on local character, which went on relationship,
right,
which went on your history, and went on you,
right,
that gave you opportunity to grow, okay? You could go down to your local lawyer, ask them to help you with your incorporation, and get incorporated, go through your business process. You would go and go to your banker that you've got your house through, your mortgage through, and put two kids through college through, shake his hand because he knew you, he knew your character.
Right.
And you could get more that way. Let me finish. What is happening today is if I have a product and say I want to invent a widget, I need $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 to even get my widget to be prepared for production for a template. Just by going through the process of going through the engineers, and it happens with inflation, but you don't have the venture capitalists that are actually putting money back into your ideas so that you can make them flourish.
Well, let's go back to your example of your local banker.
Yes.
Through federal regulation, that relationship has been destroyed.
Don't matter. Don't care who did it.
And because Farmers Bank is a perfect example of a local bank here in the Valley. They can't loan based on a personal relationship anymore. They're not permitted by law.
Stanley, I'm sorry, but I'm sick. But listen to what I'm saying. Same thing. Follow what I'm saying. So if you don't have access to capital,
you're done.
How can you actually take your idea? Because it's like, you know, right now, if you look at your heat and your electricity, at one time, if the electric went out on your house, you went to your gas stove and you heated your home, or you had a pot belly stove, or if you didn't have money for your water bill, you had a well outside. You'd go out there and pump water, and the water would pump out. Our problem today is, if the lights go out, there are no wells.
And can I add something to what Six is saying?
Ahead,
by the way, Six, the regulation that you keep on saying that the banks have and everything, because the bank did something that was wrong. They took the system and they did everything possible to top people. They did everything possible to make money over people that was poor. They created a thing called COD, and we keep on talking. If we're going back to 2008, because that's when Obama decided to do regulation, they created a thing called COD to basically have an insurance that to protect them to still make money even though you can't pay your mortgage.
Stanley,
that's what the bank did.
Stanley, it's bigger than that, baby. It happened because of manipulation of greed, but it didn't happen in the last couple of years. This was over time.
It didn't happen to the local community banks.
But I'm coming back to say, what's the responsibility of the banks right there?
But the local
you missed the point, Stanley.
It's the local community banks. The local community banks were not caught up in that. The
okay.
local community
so,
banks
so.
Were all financially
banks
sound.
Banks are banks, Dick, so what am I supposed to do?
You're going to have to listen, Stanley. If you're in New York, you don't have a whole lot of local community banks there. See, we had banks here where the whole enchilada was owned by the family down the street that you went to school with.
Bank of Magnolia, Farmers National Bank, Consumers National Bank.
We're not talking about Chase and Bank One and Citadel and all them. We're talking about Mr. Smith. Who went to school with my kids, and I went to school. And if he lost his money, he lost his money.
And they didn't sell. They didn't sell any of their loans. They held all their loans in house. Every one of those banks, those five banks I just named, holds all of their own home loans in house. They don't sell any of them.
269, your mic is on.
Yeah, you know the thing about and I think the analysis that you guys are giving is correct about. You know, how banks and things evolve. But, you know, underneath that, it's almost like you're arguing against yourself. Let me be more specific. You don't advocate for free and open market and capitalism and then argue against what it produces in the long run. How can you do that?
Easily.
Tell me how you can do that.
Because integrity and education inside of it means a lot, and I'm just talking about to me. And my problem that I have is we are losing education and integrity. And so it's not giving anyone access to what's necessary. So we have people hoping and praying that they can win $500 million and not know what to do with it in tonight's Powerball.
Okay,
and
now what in the world does that have to do with what I just said?
Because, you know, you can argue regulation because you need to have parameters. Anything that doesn't have parameters will go out of control. It's like a child. You have to have limitations. But in those limitations, they have to be accessible to all. I am a free market person, but I am a common sense girl. You know, Six and I during the break had a conversation about Walmart. I think we have allowed some of the conglomerates and the big boxes, I think we've given them too much power. And it's just like the banks. the World Banks and the Federal Reserve. It might have been conceptually a good idea for a few folks when it first started, but now it's a monster that we can't control.
Well, there's another aspect to this that we tend to forget, too, and we have a very corrupt civil court system. If the civil court system did the job it was supposed to do and enforced contract law the way it's supposed to, and we judged our juries would judge based on character and upon the merits of the case, we would have a whole different economic system when it comes to those types of things. Because if you could prove Walmart wronged you, that Walmart was selling a product at a loss in order to run you out of business, you would have a civil case against Walmart.
And that, but also,
an honest jury would find in your favor.
But you'd have a hard time proving that.
This is what I'm saying. I don't know what you guys.
Hold on. You don't know what? Because
the answers that you guys are giving are not even remotely connected to what I just said. You say, oh, well, once it gets out of line, then we want to come back and fix it.
That's not what I said.
Integrity has nothing to do with banks organizing themselves into conglomerates. That has nothing to do with business, their integrity and stuff like that. If you're saying free market reigns, then they have a right to organize themselves into monopolies and do what they feel like they need to do to continue to make profits. Either you're with that or you're against it. Which one is it?
Hold on. Let me ask you this. I got a question for you.
What
has the federal government nationalized that has a monopoly?
The post office.
No. What else?
The one thing I wanted to say about monopolies, you know, when Walmart goes into a community, they go to the redevelopment authority of that community, and they promise to raise the real estate prices for other surrounding properties. So they promise to redevelop areas when they go in. That's how they're able to develop those monopolies in those box stores.
Answer my question that I asked.
The way they do.
Answer the question that I asked. Tell me. What is a national monopoly that is governed and is overseen by the government?
Well, one is Amtrak.
No, monopoly. You know, you can go get another train if you want to build one. Give me which one it is. It's not airline. It's baseball.
What are you talking about? Federal monopolies?
Okay,
I was responding to your issue when you said the example you used of, well, back in the day, a person used to go down to their local bank and they knew the person and they played ball with them and they could go off their character and take it all that mess.
Now you're saying,
hey, it's not the local bank anymore, it's Chase. Well, they can do that if they want to under free market capitalism. Are you saying that's wrong?
They can't do it. It's not allowed.
Okay, I'm done. I'll listen.
I mean, seriously, it's not allowed any longer. You have to go. I mean, if I got bad credit and I want to give you some money, I can't. I can give it to you out of my personal account, but not from a lending institution. Mm-hmm. Not because I know that you. Now, don't get me wrong. They manipulate the system for who they choose to manipulate it for.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand how Donald Trump can go bankrupt and go get a loan next week, but
Donald,
I go bankrupt and I can't get 10 cents.
Because Donald Trump never went bankrupt. His company did. That's how.
But then also Donald Trump has access to investors who bailed him out when his casinos were going bankrupt.
Yes.
In New Jersey.
Yeah, he got a lot of private
to bail
money.
Him out.
He got a lot of private money.
But Six, if you read the book of Donald Trump, when he talks about that, he had favors with the banks also. He talks about it in the bank. He said, if I had a good communication with the bank, I would have never been able to get out of the bankruptcy that I was.
But he said it in his book.
Main book, he said it.
But he didn't.
because he had a good social communication with those banks and he treated them with respect and gave them money every year. That's why the bank didn't come hard on him.
And Stanley, hold on, Stickman, let me ask you this. I understand that he personally did not file. But my question is, how can your company go under and you still your company go get a loan?
They do it all. It's not just it's all corporate.
Because
that's the way the corporate law is written.
No, you missed my point.
It's all corporation.
Oh yeah, it is.
No,
yeah, it's through the process of incorporation you separate the corporate assets from personal assets.
We're not talking about the difference between a personal and I'm talking about how is it. And Alex, you may have the answer to the question. The number is 347-945-5229. I can't get a small business loan as a corporation. Because I don't have any access.
It goes into what Six was saying. I mean, the way that he's going to set up his corporation, like Donald Trump. I'm not exactly sure, but a lot of wealthy people they'll have, say, the Donald Trump Incorporated, whatever. Now that company, you know, that's his, and he may pay himself like similar to like what I do. I'll pay myself. I get a W-2 for my own corporation, but that's, you know, less than, you know, the revenues from my company. But now his company, he's not going to put the liability on that company to, say, like his casinos. However, Donald Trump Incorporated will own another company, say it'll be an LLC that will own the casino or whatever, and or another C-type corporation. Now, that company may go bankrupt, but legally it is a different entity than Donald Trump Incorporated. And so the only thing you see in the news is, oh, Donald Trump's company went bankrupt, but not his company that he holds all of his wealth in. That would be idiotic to do something like that. You don't set up your company, like your business ventures, in the same name as that you hold your personal wealth in. Now, that company may be owned by Donald Trump Incorporated, but it's a completely different legal entity.
So let me get this straight before I go to my top of the hour break. I have one corporation that goes bust. So I filed bankruptcy on the other, but I've moved all the assets out of there into another corporation. So I go and get a loan on the corporation that has a good integrity to go back and fund the corporation that went upside down.
Yeah, because like that bad market never went against, say, Donald Trump Incorporated. So that company can then go create another business entity, and even infuse some capital into it, some startup capital into it, and it all looks good to the bank, you know, and so. It's not like there's an actual record of history saying, "Well, you created this company, then this company." Now, and they're going bankrupt or whatever.
So, let me take my break and I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229 because I've got to come back to get to the grease thing because I want to talk about in the beginning. Because if you don't have business, you don't have future. And if you don't have a business mind, you won't be able to get out of the situation that you're in. So let me take my break, and we'll see you on the other side.
The curiosity. Canfield, Ohio.
Yeah, and that's so true, Alex. Corporation.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people incorporate in the state of Delaware. That's a popular state to incorporate if you have a small business. I think because of the tax laws, at least people that live on the East Coast.
Like I said to many people, once you're incorporated, you have a different law compared to the law that you have when you're an employee. That is so true. And a lot of people don't understand that. Until you're incorporated, it's totally
different.
You get a new law, then you're like, I can't do that. Yes, you can, because you're incorporated.
You have to still go about things wisely. I mean, you're still.
But Alex, you gotta say the first time that you saw what you could do in the tax compared when you're incorporated compared to an employee, it's like really.
Well, it depends. I mean, there's things that you can't. I mean, you can go about anything in a smart way or a clever way, or in a not so smart way. I mean, for instance, I have a C corporation, a regular corporation, and I have to pay two different taxes. I mean, my company pays a tax, and I pay a tax. And what most people don't know is that the taxes that's in your paycheck, that's only half of the payroll tax. Your corporation or the person that employs you pays the other half of those payroll taxes. So companies pay a lot of taxes, but I just think you're oversimplifying it to try to vilify corporations. It's just that it's not so much that they just, you know, they're getting away with murder or anything. I mean, if you get 20% of your check that comes out and payroll taxes from, you know, federal and Medicare, Social Security, and all that, that's only half of the taxes that the business is paying, the other half of that. And then after the business's deductions, then they have to pay corporate tax on top of that, whether it's 15%, 25%, or 35%, whatever, you know, bracket that they're in. And there's a lot of taxes that go on
Alex, explain that.
And I know about it because I pay it. I sign these checks.
Okay, but Alex, when you're incorporated, don't you receive 100% of the money is yours first? You don't give to the government first. You give it every year. At the end of the year, you have to give that money to the government.
Well, no, it's not at the end of the year. It's quarterly, every three months. Quarterly.
So if we compare that to an employee, that every paycheck he has to pay 20, 30%. So let's say the person says he has a salary of $60,000. He doesn't have a salary of $60,000. He has a salary of $60,000 minus the 20% or 30% that he has to give to the government. So he's getting 80% of his paycheck minus the, let's say, he starts saving and everything.
So what?
Compared to an owner who has 100%. And yes, he does have to pay taxes and things like that, but because he is incorporated, he could come with clause and things and saying, here's the stuff that I have spent, all the stuff that I have as to put to pay less tax.
Stanley.
So you have an advantage also.
Stanley, my question is, so what? Because businesses create they generate the economy, they stimulate the economy that generates the tax revenue for the government. That's why governments don't care about that.
I made a difference between this, because you're saying who cares. Trust me, employees, when they receive their paycheck, and I've paid employees, and when they say, how come I'm paying that tax, and they're frustrated about it, they make a difference. Trust me, when people are saying I get $75,000 or $80,000, instead of telling them the truth, no, that's not your salary. That's the salary that you're paying.
I know how it feels. I mean, my tax bracket, I'm going to tell you, I have over 10 years experience with a master's degree in electrical engineering. My tax bracket is about 30% for, you know, if I just go get a job, whatever. So I know exactly how it feels. You know, I've seen that come out of my paychecks before. I know what that is. But the thing that you don't understand is that I don't think you're sitting and really thinking about what your argument is, because how else. The reason why you're able to automatically deduct from an employee is because you already know what they're going to make. You don't know what a business is automatically going to make. That's the reason why you can't just automatically deduct it and pay it. Corporations, they have revenues, and then they have business expenses. It's no telling what that business what those business expenses are, and what businesses spend their money on. It's typically on other services. All my business expenses, they're tax deducted, but when I deduct them, they're all to vendors or other employees or other contractors that I'm paying for work. And so that stimulates the economy. I'm paying other businesses or whatever that they use to pay their employees. And so what you're talking about, it really doesn't make any sense. If you try to take businesses' money beforehand, you'll just crash the economy.
Well, I think what angers most people is when they see corporate CEOs get these balloon payments and they have bankrupted the company and they leave the company with millions of dollars in a severance package when the company had failed, or they see the profits, a company like Exxon or Microsoft making these enormous profits, and yet the people on the lower end of the scale of that business, those people aren't able to get they're not able to get like any type of increases in their salaries. And we're seeing the top 1%.
The reason you're not able to get an increase because you're an employee. Alex, I want to come back to you. You're telling me, because you're basically saying there's four kind of people in this world. There's employees, small business, and investors. Who are the people who pays the most of the four? Employees are the one who pays the most tax of the four.
No, that's not true. People who pay the
and
most
small
are
business also small business owners. People you
no.
pay the most, but the business,
no.
the business and the investor are the one that
no.
pays less because company
you're,
government.
You're
wants
wrong. You
well,
are
I'm
wrong.
Not wrong. I'm looking at the tax break and everything that business owners are having. So how does the government encourage business people to do business?
Hello,
you have 500 employees under them. If they
Stanley.
Don't encourage them by doing tax breaks.
Stanley, if you look at the tax, how taxes break down, the people who are in the top 10% of income, who earn of earnings, pay 75% of the tax revenue that the government receives. So what you're talking about is completely false. It's
when we're talking about those 10%, are we talking about the money they receive at income tax, or are we talking about the money they receive through their business? Because those are two different things. If you get through money to your income tax, you will get paid the 70%, like you're saying. But if you get the money through the thing that you have your own business, you will not get 70% of tax. That's true, Alex.
You're not understanding what I'm saying. The only, if you look at the top 10% of the population,
yes,
the amount of money that they spend in taxes accounts for 75% of the government's revenue. How is it fair that 10% of the country is already paying 3/4 of the government's revenue, and then you want to make them pay more? How is that fair?
But if we're going to the top 10, many of them, what they do to not pay that much taxes, they become incorporated or they do enterprise to not pay that tax.
Stanley, you're not.
Over the last 20 years, less than
1% of the population has garnered most of the wealth of the country.
He goes to those people who pay those 70%. You think those people doesn't pay him a high salary to not know how to not pay those 70%? He told me there's protection for them to not pay that 70%. Don't act like it's not. That's why, like Romney, what do you think he did to not pay that 70% tax? There was ways
not,
to do as a rich person.
You're arguing something completely different. You're arguing something completely different.
I'm arguing what you're saying. You're saying that the rich people are 70%, but I'm coming out. What about the law that protects them not to pay the 70%? You say that's not true. I could bring you any APA or person as an accountant for those people will tell you you're wrong, Alex, about that. And you know there's laws that protect them to do that. They don't pay the 70% of tax.
I didn't say they paid 70% of tax. What I said is that
they get 70%.
Yep, yes, they account for 75% of the income that the government takes in already. It is
okay.
Different from having a 70% tax rate. I don't agree with a progressive tax system, so I'm glad that they get to keep some of their money, because I don't want to have to pay more and more money the more money that I make. It just discourages me from working, because if I had to pay more, I mean, that was part of the reason why I created my own company, is because it's ridiculous that the more money I make, the more taxes I pay. That is insane.
And I said the same thing that you did, Alice. It was ridiculous that I would have to pay more and more because I was making more money. So I decided to do a corporation like you did.
No,
but I did that. I had loss and everything, and I went to my brother, who's a...
And that's something that the rich are able to do, is they're able to...
The rich are able to do things
most
like...
Most people.
Will never be able to do.
The rich are able to get the deductions on their tax returns, and they don't pay the full tax they should pay. Like a person like Romney, he only pays 15%
on
the investment.
Hey, that's not true. That's not true. If you're going to tell it. Capital gains, he's not paying 15% on what he earned. He's taking 15% on what he's already earned.
He's paying 15% on overseas investments that he has in the Bahamas. He only pays a 15% tax rate.
He's paying 15% on his savings.
He's paying 15% on his capital gains, on his interest.
And his savings are overseas investments.
I don't care what it is.
Portfolio in a bank that's in the Bahamas.
He's
paying 50%.
It doesn't matter Philadelphia.
It doesn't matter where his
money came from. The issue is that he's paying it on what he's already earned.
Okay.
But
every large pension plan in this country. Every large pension plan in this country has overseas holdings. Every large pension plan.
Six.
It's,
okay.
So
of the four, remember when Robert Kiyosaki said there's four kind of people. Of the four, who are the four that pays the most tax? Is it not employees and self-employed people that
no.
pay the tax?
That's not true. Alex, go ahead.
No, I mean it's completely false. I mean, if you're talking in proportion to. If you're talking in proportion to income, then the more you make as an employee, that's true. You're going to pay more in proportion. But if you look at percentage-wise. But if you're talking about just the sheer numbers of how much tax dollars they pay, the rich pay far more, the orders of magnitude more, which is why I'm trying to explain. I've been trying to explain to you that the top 10% of the country pays 75% of what the government takes in tax revenue. And so then when you say, well, they should pay more, do you want the rich to just pay 100% and that way you don't have to do anything and just be completely dependent on the government?
But
I don't understand.
But then
also,
hold on, one at a time. Stanley, you jumped in first.
Alex, that's where I have a problem with that, because if I take those same people who are 10% rich, and I know my brother is a person, an accountant for those people. He showed me the book that those people don't pay that much tax. He showed me there's many things in the law that me as an employee and me, because now I'm a business owner, didn't know before when I was an employee. He showed me many things in the law that protect them.
Stanley.
Because the rich are not going to pay the 70% and not going to get money. They have laws and things to protect them to keep money on their pocket.
Stanley.
And that's where
Stanley.
I wish, Alex, you would
Stanley.
Stanley, you're comparing apples to oranges.
No, he's right. Stanley.
I'm not.
Stanley. Listen. You're right. But listen. When you had a candidate that said, listen, we need to take the loopholes out of the tax code so that corporations will have a fair share in paying taxes. You didn't like what he said.
And Stanley, Alex did not say that rich people are paying a 70% tax rate. He said that the 70% of the dollars taken into the federal treasury through the income tax come from the top 10%. That's two entirely different things.
But also, what has happened over the last generation is that most of the wealth in the country is only concentrated in the top 1% of the earners in the country. So they have all of the wealth.
That's
they have all the wealth.
75%.
Most of the tax.
That's not entirely true. 88% of millionaires in this country are first-generation millionaires.
Yeah,
88%.
What I said was the top earners in the country have 1% have over 90% of the wealth in the country.
Let me say this: and that top 1% are not millionaires. Having assets of $1 million.
Somebody's in the top 1%. They're probably worth over $1 million.
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
The 1% is greater than. Their income is greater than $1 million. And see, and then going back to what I started with talking about Rome, come back down to where I, because I'm going to go back around. And 334, your mic is on. When I said about, you know, Rome and what we're talking about, the fiscal cliff, this $250,000 threshold that this president is stuck on is not what you would call a good number. Because it's going to shift everything. I don't know if you guys have ever felt this, but if you ever gotten to a threshold where your tax bracket increased and you almost lost your mind because you had to write a check to the IRS.
I have.
I was just telling them over the break is that, you know, I think it's insane how the more, you know, as an employee, the more money you make. Just as anybody, the more money you make, the more taxes, the progressive tax system is ridiculous. You know, like, it almost is a disincentive to working because, you know, like, I'm about, you know, in a, I guess, about 30%, you know, I pay about 30%, about 30% of my tax, of my income out in taxes. And it just, it gets to a point where it's like, well, if you work harder, it doesn't pay off.
Right.
If to work harder just to get only half of your earnings back, you know. So then you what you do is what a lot of rich people do. Then you invest. You start to invest your money and your time more wisely, and then you want to punish that too. It doesn't make any sense at all.
And what you're doing is you're incentivizing people. I just told this to Sticks during the break to stay indigent.
Right.
You do better by staying broke on paper than you do actually becoming a contributor to society and paying taxes.
I don't know, when I worked in the factory, I don't know how many times I heard guys say, I'm not working overtime, the government's just going to take it all anyways.
Exactly.
Now, if somebody at that level, at the $15 an hour level, because that was the average wage in the factories I worked at, understands that if I work for time and a half, the government's going to take it, so why waste my time? You don't think somebody making $100 million a year is going to understand that?
What do you think is going to happen to your charities, where your money comes from, if you take it all away?
Well, the reason why they're doing that is to increase the entitlements they can give the working class in the country, because they're doing the majority of the work in the country, and they need certain programs in place so that they're able to survive. And that's the reason why
taxation. Tracy.
Yeah,
I've been listening, and it's, you know, I try. Some days I'm not going to call today. Now I get on and I hear stuff. But the comment he just made a second ago about they're working and they can't survive. What were they doing before the 1960s? Before the Great War? What did we do the first 150, 60, 70 years of this country when people were out here working?
Over the past 25 years, wages have not increased. Yet we have seen an increase in prices of everything else in terms of inflation.
Can I address what he just said? Okay, so here, you're voting yourself more entitlements, which is going to force the government to print more money, which is in turn going to make your dollar worth less. And you're not going up in salary, so you're going to have to vote for more entitlements and more entitlements and more entitlements. They're going to print more money, and you're still never going to get what you're asking for. Do you see that?
Whoa, one at a time. Because what he said, we have to understand what he just said. And the reason why we're in this situation that we're in right now is because of what he just said. And that's why I'm talking about Greece today, because America doesn't realize if we continue on the road we're on, we will be as Greece.
The Greece economy is so bad that they had to stop trading. One day they had to offer 1,000% interest on a 1-year treasury bond in Greece.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. 1,000% interest. They were offering 100% interest for a 10-year note.
But also, if you look at what he just said, it's almost like we're in a ship and the ship is sinking. We got a big 8-foot hole in the bottom of a canoe, and all we want to do is take a thimble and dip it and try to get the water out with a thimble. It doesn't make sense. Eventually, somebody's going to have some responsibility, and you have to quit feeling. It's almost like you want
to
feel. Hold on, let me make a point. You want to feel sorry for one aspect of people and neglect the rest of the American people that are paying the burden, and that it will never work. And it's over because people think like that. It's over because there's too many people that think like what you just said.
But don't you think that we have an issue also, like he said, that for the last 10 years, the middle class and everything has been no higher salary, and the rich are getting richer? I'm sorry.
The problem is, Stanley, you just said yesterday, Stanley, you made a comment. No, Stanley, you said a fact yesterday, and you were wrong. You stated part of the truth. You didn't state the whole thing. You call it with half truths. I told you to post it on Tracy's website. Hold on, Tracy. I went and looked up the information you talked about, and you were wrong. You stated half of it. From the 1970s to 1989, the middle class income shrunk. And if you read it, it says due to inflation. Why? Because they printing more money because they got off the gold standard. What happened around then?
Because there are too many people
that want money. Stanley, can I finish? Too many people keep thinking we need more, we need more. That's what you keep saying. You keep saying print more money. This country is going to be destroyed because you keep trying to say print money. We don't have it. Eventually, we're going to have to actually show up this dollar. If we don't, it's over. It's over. How would you fix it? Can you give me a reason how you would fix it? How would you fix the economic system?
One of the ways that you fix it is you engage in a massive re-education program of your current workforce so that you have more people that can get out of menial employment and get into employment in which they can have a skill or a trade to work off of. The second way you can fix it is to change the concept of what the corporation is. Rather than just giving people a certain wage, most corporations should allow people to get stock options even if they're working on the assembly floor. That's something that's currently not being done.
I want to pull another call in and hold on, Alabama, because I agree with what you're saying. But what we have to understand is right now, there's no way in the world you can condition a whole workforce to educate them. People don't want to be educated on anything, and I said this to Sticks during the break, and people don't want you to be educated. Thinking people ask questions, and we don't want you to ask questions. We just want you to do what as I tell you to do.
Right. We don't want you to understand that your money is being devaluated.
Absolutely.
Because if you understood that your money was being your currency was being devaluated, there'd be people marching in the streets in Washington, D.C.
And the reason why I don't want you to know is I make money on your ignorance. Uh-huh. And that's why we're talking about this. Larry, is that you?
Yeah, Tracy, I'm just listening, so go ahead.
Okay. Hey, I'm looking for you.
And that's the reason the rich are getting richer and the wage earners are not, because the rich are investing and their dollars are moving faster than the rate of inflation, where wages are not keeping up with inflation because the commodity to keep the profit is outdriving the willingness of the people to pay for the product.
But Alex said something, and I think we all were talking over him and we missed it. We have to understand what happens to people who are wage earners, who are workers. They have regulated wage earners. to where they never get any deductions that are that mean anything for economic growth.
Right. And nobody's taught them from a young age.
Ain't no teaching me nothing. If I get a promotion, and I go from $30,000 to $70,000 a year, my percentage of taxes that I actually pay actually increases substantially.
Right.
So the money that I would have put aside is going to Uncle Sam.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's why you can't. And see, they're telling us to go after the rich and their money, because if you go after the rich and their money, they're going to come after my money. The rich are never going to become poor because you take their money from them.
No, they're not.
And what I'm saying is, it's those working poor people who are trying to come out of working poor into middle class that they're killing. Because when you get taxed at 35%, if you win the lottery tonight, they're going to take 50% of your earnings off the top just because you won. So you can be dirt poor, sleeping on the street for the last 15 years, buy one ticket, win $500 million tonight on the ball, and they're going to take 50% of the earnings in taxes. Can you tell me that's fair?
It's just like the farmers around here that are getting these big checks for their lease rates.
And
they've owned those farms for years, many years. They've had to work separate jobs to keep the farm rolling. They get a big check for their lease rates, and the government takes 35%.
I'll give you a better one than that. The people that worked at Delphi and General Motors that took the bailout, when they took the buyout.
Yeah, they had to pay 35%.
They pay 40% off of $80,000 or whatever they got.
Right.
And because they were uneducated in tax law and they didn't go see somebody about shelters. So tell me, is that right?
Hey Tracy. I just wanted to add one thing, is that, you know, we don't realize that what Styx was saying about the currency, you know, that you definitely know me. I'm definitely on board what he's saying about the devaluation of our currency. The other problem is, you know, you have the part of it is the printing of money, but you also have the fractional reserve banking, you know, because they only have to have 10% in their bank to. And then they can lend out, you know, 10 times that. If you deposit $100 in a bank, they can go lend $1,000. And so, you know, that creates inflation, because if you lend somebody, you know, money and then they go put it into another bank, well, then that other bank can now lend, you know, 10 times that. And so that causes inflation, which causes prices, our money to be devalued. But the other thing, I want to say Glass-Steagall, but it's not that. In 1999, the bill that allowed investment bankers to merge with regular depositor banks created all this speculation in the market, because now investment bankers have access to so much more capital to create all this speculation in the market. And that's really what caused the dot-com bubble. And it's creating a whole bunch of other bubbles. This is why nobody knows what the true market value is of many goods today, is because of all this speculation in the market. And that speculation is driven by just the our banking system run amok. So we need to pull all that in. We investment bankers should not have access to depositor money, for one.
And you have not heard what he just said anywhere in anybody's mouth, whether conservative and or liberal.
I've heard different people say we need to repeal of Glass-Steagall.
No, I'm saying the legislator. I'm not talking about talking heads.
Right.
I'm talking about
Ron Paul did talk about it a little bit.
Ron Paul talked about it. Anybody else?
That's it.
Rand Paul.
Rand
Paul. He's the only one who talked about it, and he's the only one that I think Republican. I would have wished that he would have been the candidate for Republican. He would have opened a lot of doors that a lot of Americans would have been really.
Rand Paul or Ron Paul?
Rand Paul.
No, Ron Paul.
Rand is a sellout. Rand is just like the rest of them.
Ron.
Ron Paul. Hold on, Larry. What you got to say? You got your. You now you want to talk?
Tracy, it was 1999 what he was talking about that basically ended Glasner-Steagall, and it had many fathers. I mean, if you remember who the president was back then, that was Bill Clinton that signed on that. The thing that you're talking about were the guys from Delphi, Tracy.
Yes.
Here's the big kick in the pants. Let's say you took and went ahead and paid the government your 40% taxes, and you invested the rest. Now, let's say you invested it and it grew wise, and then you started taking money out again. You know, you started living on the dividends. They're going to tax you again. Now, how is that fair? You've already been taxed at 40%, and now they're going to tax you again. And that's where Warren Buffett and his secretary and different stuff, and then they painted, you know, Romney as paying unfair. He's only paying 14%. The guy's already paid taxes on it once. That's why they treat it differently. So, I mean,
well let me ask you this,
money
though.
Is fair enough for you to keep. I mean, it's your
Let me ask you this, though. If you go spend your money, if you go pay your utilities, they got a tax on that. Your cable bill, they got a tax. Your cell phone bill, they got a tax. Gas, they got a tax. Buying clothes, they got a tax. Buying food, they got
exactly.
a tax.
Exactly. That's why they
get
out there. Yeah, them guys.
So everybody just focuses on the income tax and neglects. If you just bought stuff and sold it, bought it from the people for the goods, you probably would make, man, a dollar would go a lot further if it wasn't for tax.
Again, so right now we're talking about fiscal cliff. We're talking about they're playing in Washington like this is a game. We have our entitlements are ballooning. They want to take everything. They want to take a larger percentage from the rich. And I don't know what percentage will they go up to, because I know in Jimmy Carter, they were paying like 70% of their income.
It's 35 now.
With the Obamacare tax that's going to roll in, too, they're figuring it's going to be 49.5%.
So that's 50% of their wages for the top 1%? Or
everybody over 250 grand.
So if you make 250 grand...
In England, they lost half the millionaires. Half of them have moved, a lot of them are denouncing their citizenship in England because they can't live off 50%. They don't feel like it's fair. Not that they can't live off it, but they just don't feel like it's fair. So that's what's about to happen to us.
And now hold on, you got to understand also. Hold on, when you go offshore, if I'm not mistaken, you're not. Do you file taxes when you go offshore?
If you retain your U.S. citizenship.
Or do you? Now you don't file the same taxes, do you?
No, I think you don't have to pay tax on that money unless you bring it back into the country.
That's good. Okay, so now I can take
you
my money.
You have to live over there 8 months out of the year, though. It's just like playing basketball overseas. You still have to live over there, I think, over 8 months to even kind of qualify
you know,
for that.
And, you know, living in a warm country with a couple million dollars in your pocket ain't a bad deal.
But you know what, Tracy?
How would you say?
The thing about that, though, is that the rich, they're not going to get hurt by it because they actually own real assets. I mean, like, when it comes to, like, a lot of them own real estate, for instance, and if you have income coming in from real estate, you know, that is not, if you set it up properly, that's not considered income, so it won't be taxed. So, and a lot of wealthy people, that's how they make their income is on real estate. The other thing, if you have hard assets like precious metals and perhaps certain equities, as long as you don't cash it in, you're not going to get taxed. So, especially on other hard assets. So, it's only people it's going to hurt is the poor. Because it's just going to they're just going to have to print more money and borrow more, and it's going to crash your currency.
I got a question, guys, and stick to you understand, but let me ask a question before you. So if it's going to hurt the poor, do we not understand that, you know, right now they say giving is down. Now, the wealthiest of Americans usually give during this time. Your small business loans, your small business owners, and the people who are making, you know, have disposable income. They're the ones who do the philanthropic things. If they start holding their money close, and if they don't pour back into the system, how is this working from the bottom up going to help me if I have no money at the bottom? I just need some help.
Well, I don't think they're going to stop giving, because they're able to get a tax deduction if they
no,
use
no, no.
charity.
You only get up to a certain percentage, and that stuff is gone.
Nobody gives because it's not a dollar for dollar, Tracy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But here's the thing, Tracy.
It's whatever your tax
about,
rate.
We talk about Greece. We talk. This one caller there talked about England. We don't have to go outside of this country to see what is coming. You can use the millionaire's tax that was put in place down in Maryland. It didn't generate the money that they thought. And they didn't know what was going on. The millionaires that lived in Maryland, because they can, moved out of Maryland. It's
same
the same way in the state of California right now.
New York.
Well, California is a microcosm of what's happening here. They voted to give themselves a tax raise in the state of California. What they don't realize is that about 50% of that, whether it's illegal aliens that did vote or all the people that were on entitlements out there in the state of California, they voted to raise their taxes because it didn't affect them. They're already not paying taxes. And so what you're seeing is businesses fleeing the state of California. They're moving from California to Texas or to Arizona.
Well, let's start. I think a good idea would be to start talking about how to denounce your citizenship or move to another country.
No.
Look, I'm dead serious. Like, because I'm thinking about practicality. Like, I agree with everything. We got too many selfish, greedy people out here, and it's just too many. And when you try to talk to them, they're too dumb to listen and try to, well, 1 + 1 = 2, they don't get it. So it's like, now you got to say, man, look, the Titanic about to go down. I'm not going with you. I'm finna do something. Buy silver, gold, something. I'm finna get up out of here. That's how I'm thinking. Me and my brother were talking about storing up food, getting ready, because it's going. It's too much. Like, I just don't see us recovering.
He's a man after my own heart. He's building a bunker, too.
He's a prepper, just like you and I.
There you go. That's right, Larry.
So how do we
get
ready? That?
Zombie apocalypse is coming.
I can tell you guys how to solve this problem.
How do we solve it, Alex? We're always looking at Greece, and people say, look at Greece and look at Europe. You know, we don't need to look overseas. We've got it going on right here today in the United States, and no bigger than California, because California is the biggest state population-wise, and it's the same thing. You've got first the cities went bankrupt, now the government's bankrupt, and then they voted to increase the taxes, and the reason being is more people ain't paying taxes out there.
But
so of course,
hold on, but Larry, see, this is the issue.
Yeah.
See, California broke, but California is not broke to the point where people are sleeping on the streets, you know, as that's just normal for L.A. or California.
You've been to San Francisco.
I've been to San Francisco, I've been to Los Angeles, I live there. But what I'm saying is, I don't think we really understand that when you say California broke, we haven't seen a magnitude of devastation. Because, see, what I'm saying is, if we're not careful, we're going to be like a natural disaster, like Hurricane Sandy, going to be like Hurricane America. Where devastation hits all across the nation at the same time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this: Where was Europe or China or Japan? Did anybody come to our rescue when Sandy happened?
I ain't heard nothing from them. I called them on the phone, but they didn't return my phone call.
One of the problems in California, you have a lot of people that are immigrants there that aren't there legally. Now, if you get them on the payrolls where they're paying taxes too, then maybe California can save itself.
California got the same problem that D.C. has. They're broke, yet they went ahead and spent billions, multiple billions of dollars on a high-speed rail in the middle of the state that ain't nobody want or going to ride. Now, what kind of sense does that make?
Okay, can I tell you guys how to solve this problem?
Go ahead, Alan. And then I can take
as you guys are talking about, you know, how the CEO wages are going up and average worker, like it's stayed pretty much flat or gone down. That's true. The thing is like I said, repeal allowing investment bankers to, you know, to have access to the depositor money. That's one thing. The second thing is raise the percentage for fractional reserve banking.
Alex, come down. What is a fractional reserve banking? Help me out, kid.
What I was saying is that a bank has to hold, they only have to hold 10% of the money that they lend out. So if they lend you $1 million, they only have to have $100,000 in their vault, in their bank. So if you raise that and then you cut off that connection to the investment side, what that forces them to do is what banks used to do in the past, is where the only way they can make money is if they invest in local infrastructure. And that's the big difference, like, because then the banks, they can't go and invest it in the stock market or whatever. And so then if you raise the fractional reserve, then they have to invest in local businesses and make sound business decisions in local infrastructure to make money, and that's what will grow the economy, from the middle class, because regular people that will be going into the bank with their business plan saying, I need money for this, that, and the other, and the economy will grow then, or in manufacturing, in local manufacturing plants, et cetera.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Michigan.
269. So you see, just with that suggestion, again, what are you talking about? You're talking about using government, right? So he's not saying not use government, using government strategically to solve a problem. So you see, now I thought you want less government.
You do.
You see? So you see, it's almost like, you see what I'm saying? It's almost like you want to make greed okay, but only till you figure they done stole from you. Then you want to regulate it.
No, Michigan. No, you're wrong. You're wrong there, because see, the Constitution says that Congress has a responsibility to oversee its money, and that's one thing that the government has failed to do. I mean, it won't do the job that it was mandated to do in the Constitution, but then they want to do everything else that they're not supposed to, and that's really the problem. And so, as a libertarian, I do want government out of the way, but the only thing that you want to protect against is fraud. And when you are inflating the currency because, I just deposit this money in this bank and I just created more money out of thin air, that's fraud. And so that's what the government should be protecting against, fraud. And what I'm talking about is only the government protecting against that fraud. Otherwise, yes, they get out of the way and let everyday people do what they're supposed to do.
Listen, man, this is the game that we run on ourselves about not understanding the history of government and the intentions of government. What you're saying, government is just managed by another means. Even the government, man, just look at the intentions behind that stuff, is there's interest groups on that side of it too. So there's interest groups in the private sector, and there's interest group in the government sector. Well, the government sector interest group are private people too.
Yeah.
They didn't come from space.
And the government's going to do everything possible to make sure that the rich get richer, Alex, like you kept on saying. So when you're talking about government, there's always something behind it that say, you know what, we're rich, and we want to keep our money, and we want to keep the system like it is. We want to have the 200%, which next year is going to be 300%, then 400%, and we want to keep the inequality between rich and poor. We're going to keep on getting richer, and the middle class is just going to have to keep on working for $50,000 or $60,000.
Let me give you a balance to it. The gap between the rich and the poor, would still be on the same trajectory if you have less government and more corporatocracy. And it would be the same if you flip the script, less corporatocracy and more government. Y'all can't see that? Either way, you still get at the same divide, because it's what's behind capitalism that causes it,
which is
greed.
Exactly, which is greed.
You can't see. So it's either way you get the same divide.
And that's the problem
that
I keep on saying to Tracy. We have a problem with equality between middle class and rich, and nobody wants to talk about it. Everyone wants to cover it up like it's nothing, but every year it's getting bigger and bigger, huger and huger, and nobody wants to talk about it.
If you pull the government out to its menial stages, if you pull the government out now to its just, I mean, the bare bone, what you need government for, that same divide is going to become wider quicker, because corporatocracy is the government. It's government by another means.
I'm not saying I don't see that.
Oh, okay.
But what I'm saying is that, and I don't think greed is necessarily a bad thing.
Really, Alex? You're saying greed is not a bad thing when you have 200% compared to a person who's middle class who's been working 10 years for $50,000.
Let me finish. Greed is not necessarily a bad thing because it drives. In many ways, it has driven development and technology. So I'm not going to say greed is a bad thing necessarily. But here's the thing about that. What you're saying, I understand what you're saying, but that's not really a concern of mine. The only concern I have is that certain interests can use government money or what's supposed to be government money, whether, you know, it's the Fed printing money on the government's behalf or whatever, and using that at an unfair advantage, using government power, using the force of government as an unfair strategic advantage. Now, if someone goes out there and they're greedy, but yet they're clever, and they go out there and make a bunch of money and become wealthy from their own cunning, I can't be mad at them. But if you're using the advantage of government force, I have a problem.
We have no problem with that. They don't make money out of their own cunning. They make money out of the making other people work for them, who are basically making the business bigger for them. And if it wasn't for that employee, they wouldn't get the $33 billion.
That's not true.
It's
not true at
There's
all.
There's many companies that if it wasn't for your employees, you would have never made it to the billion that you had. Because
so what? They got paid, though, Stanley. Like they got paid, Stanley. So they don't owe them anything but a paycheck.
It's not a question.
Quit saying that.
You think you're going to get the heart of somebody and getting paid the same thing that he did the first year, then 5 years experience? Really?
Stanley,
really?
It doesn't make a
somebody
difference. Go get another job. Get another job, Stanley. Just get another job. That guy don't owe you. If you don't want to give you a raise and you're worth it, if you increase in productivity and you're such a good employee, you can go anywhere because you have a skill that's in demand.
This is the part where I think when
Alabama and everybody's talking about it and telling you there's 200 richer people are getting richer and the CEO is getting richer and the profit of the company.
Okay.
Could be $30-40 billion.
Stanley, could it be that the economy grew because of businesses?
Yeah.
Could it be because there were a lot of people that started businesses in the last 40 years that have been successful? As to why that is up so high? It's not.
Yeah,
it's not 200. You said 57% the other day. Now you're going up to 200.
But what's happening is you have
creation of monopolies in certain circumstances, namely Microsoft. Engaged in a large lawsuit several years ago where other software companies that wanted to compete with Microsoft were not allowed to, and it was a large sort of antitrust case that happened, and Microsoft was allowed to keep its share of the market, thus driving out all competition. So therefore, if you have this complete free market. Only the strong are going
Who's
to
saying
survive.
Complete free market?
And
nobody
said
that.
They're going to
that.
Nobody
said
that. Everybody else.
Can I ask up to that? And I'm with Stan's point here. And the brother's right. This is where the best way that I believe to solve it is to use the government to strategically and continuously induce competition by any means necessary.
Right.
I mean, at all costs and by any means necessary, to always induce competition into every marketplace.
Right.
That's the only thing that will keep it moving back and forth, the ebb and flow of it.
How does the government do that, induce competition? I'm just curious.
Okay. If you look at
taxing,
if you collect the taxes, it has to go back into ways of making sure that there's new competition and access to markets for those smaller companies. Like you say, incentives and things like that. Giving certain tax breaks to, independent banks and, things of that nature. You know how they attempt to induce competition now, but just ramp it up in any way you can. Now, if you have people who are in the business of doing that, then they would come up with all type of creative ways just to make sure. It's almost like you got to hold that horse, that you can't let that capitalism horse run wild. What holds it in place is knowing that there's always going to be competition, and we're going to make sure there's always competition so you don't get buck wild. Now, in Stanley's
Michigan, okay. I think that's a good idea, but let me ask you this, though. Like, our president you got GE and Google not paying any taxes at all.
Yeah.
No, I'm lying. I think it was 3% for GE, something real just ridiculous.
Yeah,
but everybody's screaming these points. Obamaite, they walk the guy in who's still doing the same thing. Like how are we gonna be able to do? It's like that's why I'm like it's over, because it's like people neglect to mention certain parts. I'm like, well, your guy, everybody, even Mitt Romney wasn't my guy, because he was the same way. We'll
right.
be honest. So it's kind of nobody's gonna really do.
Well,
I could trust Stanley. Well, I don't know. Stanley wants to stick it to the rich, but I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I can trust people on this phone.
Listen. Let me say something to you guys. I just got done telling our audience that are here locally. Some of you guys have some of the most brilliant minds and thought process, even if we don't agree all the time. Philadelphia, South Carolina, not Philadelphia and Stanley. Stanley, you are an attribute to my program and to what we talk about and what you have to say, even if you don't agree and we think that you're loony as a bird. You bring up things that make people think, and I appreciate that so much. Philadelphia, you engage a thought process that is absolutely wonderful. But when you talk on top of each other, nobody knows what the heck anybody's saying, and it really is rough to listen to. And what makes my program so unique is because I leave all the phone lines on. Usually when you engage in conversation and talk radio, you got two or three, and you're talking to a host. So we have to do things in order, because if we don't do things in order, no one gets anything out. So please help me with that. And when you know that somebody else is trying to get in, sometimes you got to let them just cross you. It's like driving a car. You just got to let them go. So go ahead. So since I left off with Michigan, I'm going to pick up with Michigan. How you doing, darling?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What they talking about now? What you saying?
Well, I just wanted to make a point to Stanley's point. The reason to me why Stanley's point, it's not very strong is because the analysis that he gives is at the end result, meaning this. He looks at after capitalism has run wild and then points the finger and say, hey, give me some of that back. You can't do it like that. That's why you got to, on the front end, induce the competition, because then you won't have the gap so wide. You don't wait till the gap get wide and say, hey, man, give me some of that money back that you took. And that's the basic premise of Stanley's argument, is always get it back, after you get it, now give it back. You can't do it like that.
Hey, Michigan man.
Yeah.
What we were talking about earlier was that one of the biggest problems is for regular everyday people is access to capital. And the solution that I brought forward really addresses that, because that's the problem now, is that instead of banks, it's a better investment for them to just go on the stock market and maybe even do some other things, investments, rather than invest locally, because of the way that the banking system is set up. And so the way to increase competition is to actually give people a shot at competing.
Right.
And they don't have a shot at competing if they don't have access to capital. And so this is why I think that you have to repeal, you know, you have to repeal that, the repeal to Glass-Steagall or whatever, and you have to cut that, you have to sever that tie between investment banking and depositor banking, and increase the bank fractional reserve, because that will, because then if you make it so that banks can't just invest your money, I don't think that is an affront to capitalism, because again, every country has the interest of preserving their money, you know, because when they do that, if they're inflating the currency, that's fraud. That is, and you know, that's fraud, because you are devaluing the currency. So everything else is fair game. Is all my point is. I know you're trying to, you're saying that, you know, we're against capitalism or whatever because we're trying to repeal things back. But what I'm saying is that if you give everyday folks access to capital, then, you know, a lot of these problems go away, and that's all my solution essentially is aiming at.
Okay, if you look at the infusion of credit unions, right, the nature, the organic nature of credit unions, right, they came about for what reason?
I mean, it was for that purpose of you know, the banking needs at the local level, at the community level, you know.
Okay, so if you're talking about, see, like an organic movement, now you're saying, okay, well, now the credit unions, they you know, leaning more toward being big banks. So then you need another organically led competitor to now credit unions. See,
no, that's not what I'm saying at all.
No, that's I'm saying. What you're saying is, let's figure a way so that the banks will lend locally. I'm saying no, and create another avenue of competition against them.
But see, here's the problem. If they're allowed to inflate the currency, then it won't matter, because any other competition that you introduce won't be able to compete.
No, I understand that part. Yeah. No, that part I understand.
Hey, Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think another way that the banks can also make money right now, the big banks, is they can borrow money from the Fed at zero and loan it back to the federal government at two. Is that correct?
That's a whole other. Yes, you're absolutely correct. And I mean you have to deal with the Federal Reserve and the problem is so huge. But yeah, they're able, but only the really big banks are have that infinite credit line from the Fed, which is ludicrous. I mean, you need to stop that as well.
Yeah, and but you know, the other thing that's not talked about, we always talk about the access to capital, right? But when you're talking about the government playing a role in the way that resources are divided amongst its citizenry, there's more to that formula than access to capital, because the major corporations and things of that nature, they have another access to the people who create the laws. Now, that's not even capital.
But that's what we said a little bit earlier.
Yeah. So what happens if you, like you said, if you tax the big ones, right? Well, they just figure a way around it. Hey, we'll go get it on the front end. Well, yeah, we'll just hire 120 lawyers and we won't pay no taxes.
But businesses don't pay taxes anyways, because they just pass whatever their tax bill is along in the price of their product.
Or they can do that. That's a third way.
And that's what they do now.
So that's why, to me, that's a false narrative, man, we want this government gone. Boy, we, well, they really just, ooh, they sticking it to us.
But that's
see,
what I'm, that, that,
you see the game?
But see, this is, I understand the game, and I got to take a break. Jeez, oh, man. You guys go ahead. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends.
Alex?
Yeah, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to ask a question. So when the Federal Reserve keeps on printing money and they give that money to the bank, does the bank have to pay an interest to the Federal Reserve for the money, or they don't?
That's what we're talking. That's part of the, that's what we're talking about. As part of the problem is, no. The very big banks, no.
Okay.
And so right now, I mean, are you familiar with quantitative easing?
No.
Well, right now the Federal Reserve is giving $40 billion every month to the big banks to pay off their bad mortgages.
Okay.
$40 billion every month. And so how could – I mean, imagine you're a company, I mean, getting $40 billion every month. Or a fraction of that, let's say. How can a small bank possibly compete with you?
But who gave the right to the Federal Reserve to do that? Is it Bernie, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, that just decided to do that, or is it our government that allowed him to do that? Or does the government not even know about that?
This is my point, that this is why it's so important for us to understand, read our Constitution, and understand how far we've drifted away from it. The oversight and printing of money or printing of any notes or whatever is supposed to be the responsibility of the Congress, but the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 gave that power to a private corporation. The Federal Reserve is just a private corporation. They are not a they're not the government. So since the Federal Reserve is a private corporation, they can do whatever they want to do.
Okay, but so Alex, let me ask you.
So there's no oversight at all. They give money. They print money and buy things overseas and give special favors to big corporations here domestically.
So
and there's no oversight at all.
With that formula, though, Alex, and the question that he asked, so the government can, according to what you said, how they got that power, the government can get that back.
Yeah, they can get it back. All they have to do is repeal the Federal Reserve Act. The Congress can do it overnight if they want it to, but the bank lobbyists are the strongest lobbyists in Washington.
Here we go
and
again.
So,
here, you see what we're back to that cycle of when you allow it to run wild and you don't check it, it gets so big that now it's a snowball rolling downhill and everybody's scared to jump in front of it. You see?
Well, yeah. You're right. You're right. But our government, our system, our the way our government is set up has failed us, in that there's no way to check the constitutionality of a bill before it's passed, so or before it's even voted on. So, you know, what needs to happen in some way or form is, you know, you need to be able to say, well, is this constitutional? And before it even goes to the Senate or House floor. But what happens is they pass whatever they want, it's implemented, and then unless someone brings a suit into the court that goes all the way to the Supreme Court, then, you know, it's never addressed on its constitutionality. And so that's a real failure in the way that the system is set up. I mean, I think that needs to be fixed, you know. And that's if we're talking about here in America, or if we're going to go someplace else and start all over in Uganda or Ghana or you know, Cayman Islands, whatever. The same problem is going to persist. I mean, I wholeheartedly believe in a constitutional government. I believe that the government should do what they have written down as their principle. So that's why I don't just abandon it, because I think that anywhere you go, eventually you're going to have the same problem if you don't have a constitutional government. Yeah.
So Alex, there's no way that the Federal Reserve could stop printing the money, because, like you said, if we stop printing the money, all hell's going to break loose. If tomorrow the Federal Reserve stopped printing the money, wouldn't all hell break loose in America?
No, they can stop printing money. I mean, they do print money, but most of the money that's created, they don't print it. I mean, it's just digits in a computer. They just type in a computer with a bunch of zeros behind it, and they say, here you go. So the most of the money out there, I mean, I think there's something like actually $60 trillion in circulation or whatever. There's not actual $60 trillion paper dollars out there. There may be a few trillion. There might be like $10 trillion out there, maybe 20. There's not $60 trillion actual dollars and $20 bills and $10 and $100 bills floating around. Most of it is created in a computer, and it's just an electronic transfer. So,
that's what with Tracy and about when I always say about that, I understand the concept of, you know, all of the parts of the society can be directly or indirectly related to politics. I understand that. That's not a new theory. I mean, that's old as Methuselah. But when I'm saying it to her, I'm saying it like this, like black conservatives. If they tell the truth to themselves, they have, I don't care if they're the smartest blacks on the planet, they have absolutely no more access inside of the process of European politics than ignorant Democrats on that side. Absolutely.
I agree with you.
You see?
I agree
so
with
don't
you.
Run that game. Don't run that game that, you know, access, you can have a different amount of access from one party to the next, particularly when you're black.
No, I never said that. I never even thought that.
I didn't say you, yeah, Alabama. But you get the sense of, if you don't tell the people the whole truth, you get the sense of, you know, you guys are ignorant. You don't know how to play this game, as if, you know, there's something new up the sleeve. That all of a sudden now, if you intellectual, you're going to now gain more access inside of how the political process works. You may just know more about how it works, but that does not necessarily mean it translates into you having access in. They don't even call tracing them to the table.
You're right about that, especially with your references to Claude Anderson's work. I mean, I think... if people read his, you know, Black Labor, White Wealth, Powernomics, and I can't remember the other one.
Dirty White Secrets?
No. Yeah, not that one, but he points out the history and politics or the history of African people, blacks in politics. And,
yeah, a lot of that is in Black Labor, White Wealth.
That's what I was thinking about. Yeah, black
yep.
and white. So, I think that, you know, and I feel that way with Francis Cress Welsing's work, Amos Wilson's work. You know, that we waste a lot of time by not, and especially Bobby Wright, Dr. Bobby Wright.
Oh, man.
We waste a lot of time by
reading
that stuff first.
Yep.
You know, and so if we read that stuff first, then we wouldn't waste a lot of our time on a lot of the political.
You know what, Alex? Man, this is no joke. This was about 10 years ago, man. I was just doing some research back in like the 1800s and stuff like that, and I ran across this speech. It was a speech that was given to some congressional, and I didn't know who had wrote it. Right? I was just reading the speech, and at the end, I forget what brother's name. It said, "Man, I'm talking about 1820." And it was almost like you could erase the date on that, right, as far as the problems of blacks, the access they got to politics. You could erase that date and put 2012 on there, and it would have been relative.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Something wrong
oh,
with
yeah.
That. You see?
Now, I laugh every time people think that, oh, we need more black people in government. And people don't realize that there were more blacks in the federal government in the 1800s during slavery than there is now. So it's like if you had more.
how much more access can you have if they are sitting in the sea?
Good. What y'all laughing about?
Nothing, honey.
You can't. Alex,
look,
I'm gonna let Alex tell you. I ain't gonna tell you.
Alex,
I wanted to ask you something, Alex.
Now you got my back. Hold on, wait a minute, guys. Alex, you got my back in the chat room. We family.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. We're talking about how people think that black people need to be more involved in politics. But
they are involved in politics. Didn't you go see them vote a couple weeks ago?
But I'm talking about like actual in the government, and they think that that will solve their problems. But you know, if you study our study history, we have more black people in government, in federal and state government during slavery than we do now. So it's interesting why we think that getting more involved in the government would actually solve our problems we were in slavery.
Well, look at the homosexuals. They get in, but they have a collective way of thinking. When they get in government, they all fighting for the same thing. They're all thinking the same way. We're not.
There's a difference between having power and being in power, and that's what we don't understand. We're so concerned about being in power. Barack Obama is in power, but he doesn't have power. And so power is all about relationships. I encourage everybody to read Dr. Amos Wilson. He's passed on now, but his work is timeless. Please read Dr. Amos Wilson.
His name is Amos Wilson. What did he write? Hold up, slow down. You can't talk that fast. I can't write that because you know I'm slow. You know I'm slow.
I can't remember the titles.
Blueprint to Black Power.
He wrote Blueprint to Black Power. Particularly for children, I have his Development and Psychology of the Black Child, Awakening the Black Genius in Children, Garveyism in the I think it's Garveyism in the 21st Century or something like that. What I was pointing out was his. He talks about in Blueprint to Black Power what power is. Power is relationships. It's not a position. And until we understand that, we're going to continue. You know, our efforts in politics are going to be moot, and it's not going to get us anywhere. We're just going to repeat the same thing that we did the last 200 years.
The false.
I agree.
But I was trying to get to Alex when he was talking a minute ago before we got off on his tangent was just that. Everything you said about the Federal Reserve, I agree. But and you said, how could we fix it? My thing is this: if you have guys that are willing to fund dictators in Africa to kill people, and you got guys, they're pumping money out to all these people. And the last guy that tried to do what you just said got his brains blown out in Texas.
Yep.
How are we gonna? You get what I'm saying? Like, I mean, really, how are we gonna get there if? If it's going to have to be taken by force. That's the only way I see it really being. If somebody's going to have to go even the president can't go in and unlock the door and walk into the Federal Reserve. He has to. He can't get permission.
Hey, Alex.
So, I mean, how are we going to really do this?
Alex, I just read something the other day, and I'm trying to find confirmation on it. Have you read or heard anything that the Federal Reserve actually, on the 21st of next month, the Federal Reserve, their charter ends, and unless it's renewed, they will cease to exist. Have you read anything about that? I saw something in Pravda about it, and I'm trying to verify it, and I haven't seen anything.
I haven't read anything about that, but it would make sense because it's coming up on the
100-year
anniversary.
99-year
lease, so that would make sense, but I'd have to look into that
in
further.
In 2013, and we'll maybe bring it back up again. Hold on, I just found it. I'll bring it back up on Friday. I'll have Jeff bring it up on Friday because I won't be here. But it says 2013 is the end of the charter of the Western Reserve.
Federal Reserve,
but it's not. I said Western Reserve, didn't I?
Yeah.
And we'll do some research and maybe talk about it then. That'll be good.
Did you want the other titles of those books?
Actually, I'm going to look them up online. I just want to just give us a couple titles. If you have them right now, I'd appreciate them so that you can give them out to the audience that's listening.
Yes. African-Centered Consciousness versus the New World Order. These are all Amos Wilson. The Falsification. Hello?
We're here. Go ahead.
The Falsification of African Consciousness. Awakening the Natural Genius of Black Children.
Now, I have a question for you, because you know, I've said it before, you know that we have a broader audience. We don't have just an all-black audience.
Yes.
So in reading these books, would it benefit the mainstream, or would it just educate them on African-American?
I think they could, a lot of things in there that they could use, the general public, whether you're black or white.
Okay. Because a lot of times, you know, we bring up books, you know, we need to know, well, does it just work for one, or are people?
Yeah.
Or will it help them actually cohabitate better with people that are of African-American descent?
I think it would definitely do that. Yep.
Okay.
But you know what? To speak to that, though, like, and I was listening to ESPN First Take. They were addressing the black coaches. We only had 41 out of 330 FBS schools. We only had 41 in like almost 35 years. I mean, this would help. This would benefit. Stuff like this would benefit anybody to read because these are the people that. And I don't even think a lot of it is just racism as much. It's just I'm comfortable with Joe Bob, my friend. I'm gonna put him in there.
Right.
And I think a lot of times we're getting. Because I will be the last person to sit up here and say that racism doesn't exist, that it, you know, that there are, like with college football, it's obvious that I don't even think more so racism than just outright ignorance and favoritism and what's the word, nepotism, when you put a friend or family, somebody you know,
and
who knows who.
No, and
yeah,
what
that's
I
exactly
said.
What, yeah, that's what he just said,
what
right?
It's
exactly.
My relationships.
Exactly.
But and
so
again,
I think it benefits us as blacks to have, because I raised money to go. When I played basketball one time, for a ministry one time, I went to a predominantly white church. I was able to raise thousands of dollars. Had I been at this old church I used to go to, I wouldn't be able to do that.
You'd have 20 cents on the side of the road. Hold on. 205, you have a comment because you've been sitting on and waiting in the queue for a minute.
Hi,
please,
talking to me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Paula. I called in.
Hi, Paula. How are you?
Good.
Hey, sweetheart, how you doing?
I thought that was your number.
Good.
I just wasn't sure. I'm going Sticks is here.
Mrs. Sticks.
Hi, Mrs. Sticks.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling in to say I enjoy your show.
Thank you. Now, are you listening because your husband's here or because you love us?
Because I love all of you.
Okay, just making sure.
I love him, too. He knows that.
He's blushing now. Don't start. Gonna change the subject. Did you have a comment, or were you just listening?
I was listening, and I went ahead and pushed the button, so if there was something exciting to pipe in about.
Okay. We just wanted to make sure. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. We appreciate you, Mrs. Sticks.
Thank you.
Quit blushing, Sticks. He just sitting here just grinning. I have a question for 412, Alex. When we talk about money and the conversation that we're having today, this is not a conversation that I hear in a lot of circles around a lot of dinner tables, whether it be black or white. And this kind of conversation needs to be held throughout America. I don't see this on your mainstream media. How do we begin, not as black Americans or white Americans, but how do we as Americans who really care about America? Because, you know, we will never be all white or all black ever again, but begin to fuse our minds together and get our politicians, because someone said in the chat room, we talk about fraud, but have we heard about the fraudulent and what I like to call it is the legitimate corruption of our politicians? Because this is a conversation that they should be having instead of them sitting up there having a drink and smoking a cigar and talking about the ball game last night or how Obama stole an election.
Well, I mean, I think that you're right. I mean, this isn't discussed a whole lot, and unfortunately, just the very discussion about the Fed and inflation is met with some aggression by some people who don't just don't really understand. One thing I think that we can do is we need to change our education about money, about what money is, and I think that people will start to change their spending habits, or I should say their saving habits. I encourage people to buy gold and silver. If more people started doing that because of their fear of the dollar, then that would start to change. I think start to change things with our monetary policy. It would start to curb inflation because they would stop spending so much and stop printing so much. I think that's where we can start, is encouraging people to save their money in hard assets and not in the U.S. dollar. If Americans start to express distrustfulness of the U.S. dollar by doing that, then and not saving their money in savings accounts anymore, but actually in hard assets, that would start to shift the paradigm, I think, a bit with that particular issue. I don't think it's going to happen just overnight. We're not going to get Congress to vote on it because the bankers own Congress.
But again, the bankers own Congress because the people vote, but the bankers manufacture and they maneuver and they have relationship, as you said. It actually happens with relationship. But how do we educate? And I want everyone to jump in on this. And did you want to say something before I go there?
Yeah, because this conversation does happen in certain households, in wealthy households. And that's the thing. It does, because wealthy people teach their children about money. Poor and middle-class people do not teach their children about money.
I think it's changed now. And the reason, well, wealthy people, yes. Rich people, no. Because there's a difference.
Yes, there is.
But see, I'm looking at the average American household that, because we have so many distractions, that we don't sit down and have conversations at our dinner tables anymore,
right.
Not even on holidays.
Right.
Let alone during the course of a week. So where in the world do we glean this information, gather the information, and then distribute this information so that we can actually start impacting change within our own communities? Because if the preacher won't do it and the teachers don't do it and the media doesn't do it, then how are we going to make sure that we begin to become the controllers of the we the people in the Constitution and not the bankers? Because remember, we go and vote, but they control the relationship that they have with my vote.
Well, they buy your vote.
They don't even buy my vote. They manufacture my vote. They manipulate my vote.
Okay.
They don't buy it anymore.
Does anybody listen to is anybody familiar with Stansberry research, Stansberry and Associates?
Well, that sounds familiar. I'm
I'm going to recommend this to all your listeners and obviously everybody here. I subscribe to their newsletter and I listen to their radio broadcasts. I download on their podcast. They have also investment advice and all that stuff. That's essentially what they are. I mean, they're an investment firm. They're one of the few investment firms that actually predicted the crash, and all their clients made money from it. They predicted the GM. They told their people to pull their money out of GM and bet against it. And everybody said they were crazy and all this stuff.
Said the same thing. Go ahead.
And next thing we know what happened with GM and all their clients made money. And they've called all the shots over the last, I would say, 8 years. They've been dead on, and not just GM, but a lot of the other insurance companies and that failed, and other companies that went under in 2008, they called it, and their clients made money on that. They're calling the next crash is going to be. essentially, they are they're one of my sources, along with the Von Mises Institute, with their writings.
What was the other one?
Von Mises Institute. I'm very very familiar with them. Very good stuff.
Ludwig von Mises. Yeah.
Ludwig von Mises.
I would encourage people to. Those are two sources that I use for my just continued financial education and just to stay abreast of what's going on, you know, in the market. And you know, if you want to find out how to make money off the fiscal cliff, you know, listen to Stansberry research. I mean, or at least listen to what they have to say about it. I don't agree with everything. But, you know, there's some things I didn't agree with him on, and I look at the stock, and my gosh, it went up, and I could have made some money, you know, whatever. But so they have some really intelligent guys over there, and a lot of their people are free market, are economists, I should say, and libertarians, you know, so they're very bright guys. So I would recommend people, if they're worried about what they're going to do with their money and or how they're going to, I should say, retain the value of their money, those are two places just to start reading to start their education a little bit. Ludwig von Mises Institute.
And if you go to TracyandFriends.com, I've actually posted all of them in our chat room.
Okay, that's great.
Mm-hmm. I put them in there. So if you want to get them, if you want to email us, you can at TracyWinbush@gmail.com, and I'll forward them to you because I'm trying to make sure that you have the – I think it's good that you have the information. You need to have the information. And, you know, before I go to the next call, but Michigan, if you have – do you have any suggestions for a reading?
No.
What?
Well, I just gave you the
titles of
the books I
suggest you read. Alabama? How about you, Stanley?
Yeah.
For me, it's really the basic Robert Kiyosaki. A lot of his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, The Four Quadrants. It talks about everything that he's talking about, a lot of things. What's an employee? What's the self-employed? What's a business owner? How come the employees are getting taxed? Things like that. The basics. So a lot of books of Robert Kiyosaki, I would recommend to start with that first.
How about you, Alabama?
I'm just learning. You know, I admit I don't know everything. I'm just listening to Alex, and I read just about all of Robert's stuff. I mean, I love Robert Kiyosaki. He was the one that said that silver was a consumable more than gold. So you want to more so try to be in silver, and it's cheaper. It's like $35 an ounce right now. So that's about it. I mean, I don't really, you know, I buy a few coins here and there, but I don't buy a lot, but I buy maybe about 3 or 4 a month. I try to buy every once in a while. I hadn't bought some in like 2-3 months, though, but I usually try to save them and keep them because if something happened, it may go up. They, you know, I've heard numbers up to $5,000 an ounce on, you know, for silver. They're saying it's undervalued. So, we, you know, I mean, I do think the dollar is going to go. So,
yeah, that's a really good idea because silver, because traditionally silver is supposed to be gold is supposed to be 16-1 to silver. You know, right now it's like 53-1 because of, because of government meddling and printing of money and all that stuff and by other countries as well. But they can't do it forever. It's starting to dwindle. The value of silver the ratio is getting closer. It's not 53-1 anymore between gold and silver. I think it's in the mid 40s somewhere. But traditionally, it's supposed to be 16. So if you invest now in silver, if the market goes all the way where a lot of people think it's going to go, I mean, you can make, you know, at least 300-400% return on what you invest. So
if you think about it, if you think about what you just said, if you know, I remember buying gold earrings and paying $50 or $60 for them, and you know now it's several hundred dollars, and when you look at selling gold right now, it was something like $320 an ounce, and now it's at $1,600 an ounce.
The ratio is 50.97. I just did the math. Silver right now is 33.71. Gold $1,718.
Oh wow! Okay, but so yeah. so there's a lot of money to be made there then.
yeah, there is. And when silver started taking off 2 years ago, they manipulated it, changed the rules to keep people from buying, to try to drive the price down.
Stanley.
Yes.
Be still.
You know, one thing about, and that's why I like the idea of gold and silver, is because man, they've been using that for money for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And a friend of mine was like, yeah, they're not, you know, the dollar goes, gold and silver is not going to be worth anything. You know, you're going to have to barter. I disagree. I think that doesn't mean that other countries aren't going to recognize gold and silver as a commodity on this planet. Everybody on Earth would have to stop in order for that to be true. And I don't think so. I think if the dollar goes, you're holding gold and silver, if you own land, or you own, like he's saying, real true assets like that, I think that's a very smart place to be. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I wouldn't want to be, you know, sitting with a bank account with a few $1,000,000 in it and think I'm safe. You're not.
People need to keep this in the back of their head. All of the up and coming countries, China, Russia, Argentina, India, all their central banks are buying gold right now by the ton.
And
the rest
Venezuela
of the world
too,
is getting ready to dump the dollar.
Before I go to my break, I need for you guys, can you tell me, I want to try to get someone on here. I've been trying to get somebody from the Federal Reserve on here for years, and they will not come. I don't know why.
Oh, they'll get jumped on. They'll get ganged up on, for real.
I don't know why. But I need to know, and I need for somebody to explain this to me. What will happen, and what do you think will happen if the world goes off the dollar currency for oil?
I can see oil at $500 or $600 a barrel.
No. What will happen to America? What will happen to America if the world comes off the dollar for oil?
We'll have to reset to the Amero. That's what we'll have to do.
But even if it goes into the Amero, what will happen to America? What will happen to me? What will happen to me and my little radio program and me sitting
in the
box?
I think there's going to be a time where truckers can't afford diesel fuel and trucks are going to stop moving. And when that happens, it's going to be crazy for a few months, I think. I mean, it's going to be like apocalypse. Like, what's those movies, well, Mad Max? I can see it getting like that for a while. I can see it getting that crazy because people are gonna, they're not gonna die. They're gonna see, the people are survivors. They're gonna fight. They're gonna come take what they can to survive. And then once the government starts to kind of consolidate again, I can see it happening for a while. I mean, you know,
well,
I do.
I don't think it's gonna get that crazy, but I think that what'll happen is you'll see a huge spike in inflation. The cost of food would go up because, of course, the fuel for the truckers, the transport of the food goes up. So the cost of everything is just going to go up, including there won't be any more cheap electronics because all plastics are made of oil. A lot of people don't realize that, but it's a derivative of petroleum. Plastic is. So you're going to see just about everything we take for granted is going to – you're probably going to see at least a 20% increase in costs, you know, at least. So,
But now, hold on, Alex. What you said, you're right. But, I mean, you know, America is addicted to plastic.
Yeah.
We are addicted to oil. Everything that we have, including the grease I put in my head, is oil. Every lotion, all of it has an oil base. There's something,
yep,
derivative, Coke bottle, water bottle. And, yep, you know, I look at looting. I look at, you know, in the inner city, if you leave a house vacant, you know, it went from taking the siding off the house to taking the copper out the house to now stealing the air conditioners from around the house and the water meter.
And the pipes.
And the pipes. That's what I'm saying. You know, so you go to back to your home after, you know, somebody passed away. They left the house there, and when you come back, the house is standing, but everything in the house, including the doors, are gone.
Well, this is why I think they already know what's going to happen, and they intend for it to happen, for to bring in a world government and a world currency, because I think that's the purpose of the drones that's coming. And I can't believe that the media is just not talking about this. I mean, because with the NDAA that was signed last year, I mean, there's going to be over 10,000 drones in domestic airspace, in American airspace, in the next 3 years.
Why?
And so, you say why?
Why? I mean, because, you know, when I was in Los Angeles, you know, it was nothing for helicopters to be flying over your and shining lights in your windows in the middle of the night. So you're telling me that we're going to have drones flying?
Well, they're just going to be hovering there, yeah. Or they may circle around or whatever. But, yeah, they're just going to be spying on everyone. And what they're going to do is justify it with exactly what you're talking about, because inflation is going to come up, and so then crime is going to increase. And so then they're going to say, well, we need these for deterrent, theft deterrent, or to have a faster response to crime, or they're going to make up anything to push it. And it seems like that's what their plan is, and it's just really scary to me, you know. But that it looks like that's where we're headed. You know?
There is one ace in the hole we have on fuel, though. I mean, compressed natural gas could really tip this balance, because it's here and it's local, and it's not going to, because it's dollars priced in dollars, it's not going to matter what the worldwide market is, because there really isn't a worldwide market for natural gas. So that could be a saving grace.
But you have to convert all of the vehicles to use the natural gas, which is
it's not that hard.
Well, no, I know it's not hard. I mean, I know how to do it, but there's still a cost to doing it, though, to converting vehicles over to run on the natural gas.
Alice, man, what you don't do? You convert, you do wiring. Look at me, I need a house wired up. I might need to call you.
Hey,
Alice said you gonna convert the car to natural gas. I'm like, man.
Light, you don't ask Alex to change the light bulb in the house. You ask him to change the light bulb.
I'm just playing.
I'm serious. Alabama, listen. You ask Alex to change a light bulb on the sun. You don't ask Alex to change the light bulb in the house, because if you ask Alex to change the light bulb in the house, you might not get no sun. I love you, Alex.
You're losing me on that one, but okay.
You listen to what I'm saying. There are people out there, and I will attest. I will vouch for Alex. Alex is bright. He's a bright young man, and it's a blessing to have him around. But some people are brilliant and not domestic. So asking him to wire a bomb is easier than asking him to wire your house.
I'll own up to that. I mean, because I
was just playing. I wasn't even trying to insult. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm serious. Yeah. Am I right, Alex?
Yeah, I'll own up to that.
I ain't never seen you with a hammer in your hand. Now, your grandpa.
but you know what, though?
Can I say something?
You look around the last turn of the century at all these inventors. We don't have as many inventors as we had, and I think it's because we aren't as hands-on as we used to be. Because if I went and looked at that guy Tesla, I mean that guy was, I mean this guy was almost, he didn't do it, but he almost made power free. Like you could just buy something and plug it in your house, and you don't ever have to pay a power bill again. That's how smart this guy was.
He tried.
Guy was that smart, and I'm just sitting like, wait. But he was working when he was a little kid, 6 years old, running circuits, and he was hands on. That little kid in Africa. that there's a little kid in, I think, from one part of Africa that is just like that, and they flew him into MIT. And he's like 13, 14 years old, and he was just talking about how he wants to bring power to his whole village. And I mean, I think there's something to be benefited from being able to be hands-on from an early age and being able to be able to go out and work stuff with your hands. And I think it's a real true experience in that. Because you can truly be an inventor. My dad was like, he died, but my dad could look at stuff because my dad worked with his hands and he built his own, he rehabbed his own. He would look at something and just go cut it off the wood and make it. And I just was like, I would marvel, like, man. But he wanted me to go get my book, go to school. And I wanted him to show me how to do stuff. No, you're gonna work with your brain. You're not going to work with your hands. But I would marvel. Now, I really think I could have used that skill that he had to be able to go out and just use a saw and the wood and just be able to create. We lost that. I don't think young guys nowadays, because most guys in their 50s and 60s still know how to drop. You know, you got people around here that can fix a car, drop motors, transmissions without a book. I mean, we all got them in the black community. We don't have that now.
This is the issue, and I agree with you. I agree with you. We have lost that skill. But it's not a skill that we cannot acquire again. You know, there you still can go and start learning how to do some things if you have the initiative. But we've lost the will to learn. But I do want to say, when you talk about Tesla, that is a prime example of how manipulation of government is. Remember, when you look at him and listen to his story, and if you guys want to, and his name is, I want to say, what
Nikolai.
Was his, Nikolai Tesla.
Yes.
Go and look him up. You can watch a documentary online about him. And you can read the Wikipedia about him. You have to realize that they made him stop doing what he did. They manipulated him out of where he was going so that he would not create a free electric program.
I asked my friend who's an electrician. He said when you look at any box on any house, it has a UL on it. That stands for something, he told me. He was like, you could go out and create one of those generators if you want that he has. And if your house catches on fire, no insurance company, because of some government, like the way they got it set up with the government, no insurance company will write your check if your house is wired up that way, even though it makes perfect sense.
What'd you say, Alan? What'd you say?
What it is it's Underwriters Laboratories. They test everything, and then once they test it, the insurance companies sign off on it. It's really not a government body. But it is Underwriters Laboratories.
If a house burned up, if you use one of Tesla's generators and generate power for your house free,
if your house catches
a fire and it's using that, that's why the power company got it set up like that.
If you have anything in your house, if something that's not UL rated burns your house down, your insurance company won't cover it.
Correct. What I'm saying is, look at the history of Tesla.
Right. When he died, the FBI came in immediately and confiscated
everything
in his office and his home.
Everything.
All of his papers.
Because they did not want that information to get out.
Have you guys seen the guy, he's either a son of, is it Johnson & Johnson or Procter & Gamble, one of those dynasty families, but he made that movie called Thrive. Have you guys seen that?
No, I haven't.
No, what happened?
If you just, it's in HD on YouTube, or if you just type in the Thrive movie in Google, it'll come up. But I encourage you to see it. But, you know, this guy, him and his wife, and they're very well, they have a lot of means. I mean, they're in one of the families. It's either Procter & Gamble or Johnson & Johnson. But they basically set out to figure out, well, you know, what was the problem, you know, why there's all this suffering, blah blah blah, and he it's a documentary, and he pointed out how all these people who, and it's not even in Tesla's time, but even in the last 20 to 30 years that came up with devices that created free energy was confiscated by the government, and or you know, they were shut down by the government in some way. He has one of the guys, you know, he's talking to him, and he actually testified before Congress. They brought his machine in, and it was a dynamo, essentially. So there's things that we can do, we could still do. I mean, I know we'll probably never get back Tesla's work, but there's still things out there we can do to generate free energy, but you know, enough of us have to get on board with it, have to be informed about it, and
what's to stop me from, let's say, just like those guys went to Africa without digging for gold, what's to stop me from taking a few hundred thousand to China and getting them to generate these things and sell them on a mass level? What's this? You get what I'm saying? Like, I think it would be a great idea, but you would have to, you know, I think you would, the government would be the problem. What you call UL rated sticks? I think we need to change that because that would help. If you want to help the poor, get rid of that power company. Get rid of the power company when you got a freezing bill in the winter or a cooling bill in the summer. That's what makes your bill high.
No, you could just run
your power off that. You would save hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
You can do anything you want or use anything you want, but it just will not be insured by your insurance company if something goes wrong.
You can build your own generator,
run your own house if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if something goes wrong and it burns your house down, if it's not UL rated, your insurance company will not pay for the damages. That's all. But you can do
so if you got an insurance company that goes in and works with you on that, then you kind of own something, right?
They won't do that. And see, that's a whole nother, they won't do that. They're not in the business to go against one another so that you can have. It's almost like a deal. I cut a deal with you, and you cut a deal with me. And as long as we're together,
but a lot of insurance companies about to go out of business. With this Obama, so it's you know, I'm just thinking,
they're not going out of business. They're making money. They're not going out of business.
With Obamacare,
you know, doctors, insurance companies not going out of business. No way. They're making the money. They helped write the legislation. For the bill.
You got to
not all of them. Not all of them.
Indemnity companies. There's all. Not every insurer is a health insurer.
No, he said the insurance company is going out. Obamacare will not affect your property insurance. And your property insurance, health care, the health insurance companies are going to make money.
Yeah, health insurance companies are.
Yes.
Because they wrote the...
Insurance business, that's not going... They're not going anywhere. Remember, that's why...
So let me ask you, so when they dump all those people onto the public program, that's going to make money for them? I'm just trying, because they're not getting any payments anymore. So I'm trying to understand how they're going to make money.
How are they going to make money?
Yeah.
Who, the insurance companies?
When employers started realizing, you know what, I'm paying more for this insurance than I would for the fee to pay if they didn't have insurance, I'm going to dump their insurance, and they're going to be on that public program. How those insurance, the companies that were getting money from private organizations that have lost those people, how are they going to continue to make money?
From the
because
government.
Of this bill. That's what I'm saying.
From the government.
So the government's just going to write them a check?
Absolutely.
Because they're saying it's just going to be one option when you go into these exchange places. It's really, I mean, you may have two or three different configurations, but it's
Absolutely.
The same program.
Absolutely.
So how are they making money? That's what I'm asking.
The government, the same way they make money now. Let me put it to you this way, and we're really off subject. I want to thank everybody for listening in today. Why? Remember, utilities were public at one time. You know, natural gas is a natural resource that comes from the natural ground that they contracted out to a gas company, and then but every public entity still pays gas for the natural gas that comes into their offices.
That's right. You cannot drill a natural gas well in your backyard if you want to.
You following me? Electricity was a. Okay, look, better water. A lot of cities own their own water, yet they pay their own water bills. I mean, if you really want to see the educational system, and if you want to take the, if you really want to do something with education, make all public education buildings to where they didn't have to pay natural, you know, utilities like electric, gas, and water. And watch how their income, as far as education, would increase, but they pay more commercial rates just like you do. They don't get a break because they're at school. They actually go higher.
I had a comedy club, so I know what you. I may have been open two weekends, and had a $500 water bill. So I know what you're talking about.
So
that was just
so
for the first. I was like, why y'all charging me? They just charge. I mean, I don't know what it is about a business. They hit you hard.
So let's take you're talking about not a business. You're talking about insurance companies, and you think the insurance company will not cut somebody else a check? Right now, they are cutting checks to General Electric so that they can have a massive computer to store all your medical information in a central database. Look at the Federal Reserve. It's not owned by America. Look at the IRS. It's not owned by America. It's not even owned. So you think that they won't cut a check to another entity? Who is the IRS? Who are those people?
Gestapo.
Who are they? Who owns it? Who are those people?
They're the arm of the Federal Reserve. They're the enforcers for the Federal Reserve.
That's not my question. Who are they? Give me a picture of an IRS. I know the agent. I know they get paid, but I know that the IRS is not owned by the American public. So who owns the IRS? Who controls that arm? And why do you have 72,000 pages of tax code?
I mean, well, I got a better question. How could they pass the bill for the health care law and make it constitutional when the bill says that we can change it as we see fit as we go?
Because
that should have been,
I
don't even see.
You got
to
pass it
to read it. No. I mean, the bill itself said we can change it as we go. Anything
Alabama.
We want to add to it, we can. And that's constitutional?
Alabama, you got to pass it to read it. You know, you can't. Do you realize they passed that?
I'm talking about the Supreme Court. It was passed.
No, listen here. Have you looked at the Supreme Court? Have you looked at those people? Do you really think they read 1,900 pages?
2,500.
Have you looked at them lately? They can't stay awake at the State of the Union address. And you really think they actually read that?
No,
come
they
on
didn't.
Now. Listen, I mean, we're way off track, but I mean, you got people that you elect to office, and they have never, you sent lawyers because you think they're writing something, and you don't understand. You're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, for lawyers to write legislation because your legislators do not write their own bills.
Has anybody ever considered it takes 12 pages to run the entire country, but 2,900 pages to
do a health care bill?
Healthcare bill.
409, your mic is on.
Hey, Tracy, how you doing? It's Homeschool Dad.
Hey, Homeschool, how are you?
Good. Hey, Sticks, what's up?
We're doing good. How you doing, Homeschool?
I'm doing all right. I just want to know when you guys are going to do a prepper show.
We're working on that. We're working on getting Backwoods Home on. We're working on that right now.
That would be awesome because my wife and I have been reading that magazine for years.
Yeah, we're working on
it. Love those guys.
You guys need to explain Pepper because, you know, Pepper is...
Prepper.
Oh,
Prepper. P-R-E-P-P-E-R.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody who's prepared for anything.
Okay.
They got a show. Is it Nat Geo or Discovery's got the Doomsday Prepper show?
Discovery,
yeah.
Y'all watching Prepper? You guys watching that too? I thought that was the only people that lived in the sticks.
No, that's...
Go ahead.
Alex, you watch it too?
No, because I don't do cable. I don't have cable television, so no.
Since I was talking about
you might want to YouTube that one. You might want to YouTube it. They got some good ideas on that.
Yeah.
I gotta throw this out. I gotta tell y'all this. I called the cable company today because I don't like how much we pay. And I said to them, how much will it cost me to cancel all my cable and just keep my internet? And my price went down. Can anybody explain to me how I can call to cancel it and the price go down?
They all do it. Dish did it to me.
So why don't they just have the price down?
Well, that's utility. You can audit utility bills. Just they do it for businesses. If you were to audit them for houses, I mean, just on water and power alone, they raping people. They price gouge. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, just like I said, I had a $500 water bill for 6 days in a business, and I wasn't using that much water. I washed dishes at the end of the night. I mean, we had a machine, but it wasn't that much water. It's supposed to be efficient. So, just goes to show you.
Well, somebody in the chat room, please tell this person that the IRS is not a government agency.
I think it is. It's designated under the U.S. Treasury, isn't it?
Yeah, it's part of the Treasury Department. The IRS is part of the Treasury Department.
I don't think so.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
It is not owned by the Treasury Department.
Yes, it is.
Why does the Treasury not have the printing presses of our money? Don't that make sense?
That's what's in the Constitution.
We shouldn't even have a national debt.
Because the Congress... Because the Congress gave up their responsibility and gave it to the Federal Reserve.
That right there is probably, and I may be wrong, you could disagree with me, Ali, but I think that's probably 75% of our problems in this country.
Is what?
Is the Federal Reserve. Is that one little problem. If we hadn't made that one move, that would have fixed a lot of stuff. A lot of these financial problems, I mean.
I'm sure Alex agrees. I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Because
if
you print the money off, there would be no debt. You could print off what you need, and it wouldn't be such a big deal.
Well, no, you can't just print money without backing.
It'll be backed, but all in we would have to do then is just worry about backing. Now we'll be talking about, instead of printing money, we'll be talking about getting more oil, getting more gold to back it. That's all we'll be talking about. We'll be talking about printing it. We'll be talking about drilling. We'll be talking about, that's the only way we're going to print it.
Right, right. And that's the way it was up until 1913. There was no more money in circulation unless there was another ounce of gold found somewhere.
Right. Or, yeah, you know, or you do it through manufacturing. And so when you manufacture and then what you sell, you're going to get some money for, but you try to do that through the export. We acquired a lot of hard assets like silver and gold through the export of our cotton. You know, I know it was on slave labor, but still, the export of tobacco and cotton actually, increased America's wealth as well. And so that's what we would need to focus on. Not just trying to, mine gold or whatever, but actual manufacturing, and then we'd be exporting our goods and services to the world, and that would also,
I don't think the CIA would be able. I don't think the CIA would be able to, be honest. I mean, to be able to fight and cause a lot of the proxy wars and things that the CIA has done. That we have to own up to, and I think a lot of that, if they had to actually do that with real money, like you said, instead of fiat money. With fiat money, you can bribe people. You can't bribe people if you really have, because it's just only a certain amount. Now they're just printing whatever they need, hand it out, bribe.
Well,
it's probably way more out there than we know.
Well, that's
you
not.
You read Ron Paul's book, did you?
No, I just, anybody can see what they're doing. I mean, I'm not just a warmonger, like, just because I'm a conservative. No, you still can't just go ahead and it's obvious, like CIA, and even when Bob Marley got shot, we had something to do with that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we don't, that the CIA has been doing, even with the drug game, what they did with the Iran-Contra. I mean, they got to own up to that one. I mean, they have to.
Alabama sure is good seeing you today. Ain't been around in a while with that little southern twang. We've missed you. Hey, Alex, thank you. I gotta go. I'm at the end of my day. I'm going to go do some work now. Six thanks.
See y'all later.
I'm gonna watch Thrive in my cubicle now. I'll see y'all.
I'll see you
government
guys.
Dollars at work. Government dollars at work.
How much? Your American dollars. Listen, I don't know what we're doing tomorrow, but we're doing something. You guys have a blessed day. We'll see you then. God bless you and have a wonderful one. Thanks, Six.